Alrighty, Joel Radio is back. Look at this. It's Movie Mania 2018. The year-end spectacular. Meaning mid-February, but that's the end of the movie season. The end of award season. We give out our awards. For...
Fingers will fly.
Thumbs will be going up and down.
Thumbs will be going all kinds of places.
Movie Mania. Corey wearing his Me Too pin over there. I'm wearing a Time's Up t-shirt, so we're representing.
Oddly enough, we're both wearing purple. I don't know why
yeah. This is how would you a wine colored shirt maybe?
Yeah.
And yours is checked and mine is a V-neck pocket tee.
No coordination was done on this, but we somehow.
Well, that's all right. It's the hot color, man.
I don't know what movement we're representing.
It's a hot color. That's all.
We wore black to this podcast to show.
Well, this is where we're going to tell you all the best movies. If you're a movie fan and if you listen to this show, you must be, because that's what we talk about every week, is we tell you what movies we liked on top of whatever other nonsense we're covering at the time. And so we've now got together all of our best movies of 2017. I do that by not only just seeing movies I want to see, then I go ahead and see all of the Oscar-nominated movies in all the major categories. So I have seen all of those in all the categories for picture, the acting awards, director. I think just by default, without even trying, I saw all of the best visual effects movies, the cinematography, all of those. I try to see all the documentaries, and there's one that I just could not find in any way, shape, or form, because sometimes documentaries are like that. They're not distributed well. So there's one I couldn't see there. But we will talk about
it
all
is really, it's really
the
hard.
Oscars. And all that
isn't
too.
Wiener nominated for a documentary?
Wiener's like 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, Wiener's like 2 years ago. And it was nominated, but it's not. But yeah, the documentary I could not see is something called Faces Places. But I saw the other ones. And I think the other ones are on Netflix, I think, for the most part.
But I tried to do Wiener for my film group, and it was like gone within a week.
Yeah, it's very
odd. And that's
odd.
A great documentary.
Yeah, it's very odd. It's anyway. Documentaries do not have the best distribution channels. But yeah, Abacus and Icarus. I talked about all of these on Strong Island we're going to talk about today. We have a lot of things. So anyway, let's get into...
For who? I have no idea.
Well, I like documentaries. And if you're a fan of documentaries...
So we're just going to listen to things Joel watched that no one else saw.
Well, we're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about too, dummy. That's how this works.
It's like, you know, there's a program here at the Detroit Film Theater at the Detroit Institute of Arts. They run a shorts program, and they just put all the Oscar-nominated shorts. And apparently they're selling out. But
yeah,
no one else would ever know that those shorts existed until the Oscar night. And then some guy from Bulgaria comes up and wins his award.
Yeah,
talks for 5 minutes.
Well, those guys that do well in those, a lot of times they'll get feature projects. Sure. And I think that's a lot of reason why people do it.
Well, like Paul Thomas Anderson did shorts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of directors will do shorts before they do.
So that's why they're done more than like, people are going to watch this. Or,
but no one ever sees them.
Well, the few people that see them have some stroke in the industry that can help these filmmakers later.
You know, I think these theater chains would be advised maybe to put some of these shorts. You know, you're already going to
in front of the features.
There's already a half hour of stuff before the movie.
Yeah.
You can buy your ticket and walk in and watch trailers and commercials and bullshit. So why not throw a 5 minute short in there?
Well, I don't see the shorts. If I could see them easier, I probably would watch the shorts and have an opinion on which one was the best and which one should win the Oscar. But I don't.
Throw in a cartoon.
Okay. Well, Disney does that. Well, Disney did the thing where with Coco, they put an Olaf short in front of it. So Olaf from Frozen.
And everybody bitched about that.
Well, everyone bitched when they took it off after 2 weeks. It was a way to like pop their grosses. And then they took it off.
Well, I heard people complaining
Coco.
The short was too long.
Oh, maybe that was it too. But anyway, they got rid of the Olaf short.
It was like 20 minutes instead of 7.
Oh, okay.
So everybody complained about that.
Maybe.
Because guess what? People will complain about anything
because
we have the megaphone of the internet now. And democratized
and
media.
Isn't that wonderful? So here's how we're going to do this. We each, Corey and I each have a list of our favorite 15 films. Now, my criteria for 15 is I go with, at the end of the day, I go with what was my favorite, meaning that I'm not going, this was the quote-unquote best, or this is what I think is important and emphasizing some sort of thing. I'm going, this is what I'm recommending people see, 15 movies from last year. And then we do have some runners up, and we'll talk about all the Oscar nominated stuff. We have our worst movies, which is an amazingly short list for me. Maybe it's because I saw fewer movies than in the past. I don't know. It looks like I got a list of 50 movies here altogether between all of the categories. But anyway, so we're going to get into that. We're going to count them down. Me and Corey don't know what's on each other's list at this point. I'm sure there'll be some overlap. And basically, when I give Corey, if I start and say, here's my 15, and it's higher on Corey's list, then I'll say, well, Corey, you go ahead and talk about whatever movie.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of overlap.
I think there's going to be some. But there was an attempt on my part to go, why don't you see the movies that I like that you didn't see? And I'm not sure how far we went on that, but anyway, let's get into it. Let's start here with, you want to give your 15 or I can give mine? How would you like to go?
My number 15.
Corey's got a 15, all right.
Is from a filmmaker from a famous family.
Okay.
And it's at 15, just barely.
Just barely, hanging in.
But I thought it had enough merit and it was interesting enough.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie, but it's got elements of it that are pretty compelling and some good performances. And that would be The Beguiled from Sofia Coppola.
Beguiled. Okay. This is all you because I didn't see it.
This is a remake of a Don Siegel, Clint Eastwood movie from the 70s.
Okay.
I think that is the better movie.
That's also The Beguiled?
Yes.
Okay.
This is a remake of the, it's a book. It was a novel from the 60s.
Is it a costume drama?
Yeah.
I remember the trailer, but I don't remember this movie.
It's about a northern soldier gets caught behind enemy lines and is wounded. And he's taken to this girls' school, which all the men have been gone off to war. So it's just a girls' school. And so Colin Farrell plays the Union soldier, and he enters this community of girls. And you've got... Nicole Kidman is the headmistress, and Kirsten Dunst is the teacher.
Okay.
And then there's all these different girls in there, including the other Fanning.
Ellie Fanning.
Generally, he just sort of, his presence there disturbs everybody.
Hmm.
And this little community of women starts to kind of lose their minds. And everybody kind of gets driven nuts with passionate. They're all trying to get to him, and he kind of manipulates them back and forth. So it's a real battle of the sexes, sexual politics movie. I think in the 70s, it was much more kind of bold with it. It was a little bit more savage.
Yeah.
This one is also, definitely those elements are there, but I think it was really, Sofia Coppola tried to do this Southern Gothic-y thing, and she's, you know what? I don't think she's the greatest filmmaker.
No, maybe not.
She's not her dad.
No.
But
who for a short period of time probably was the greatest filmmaker
in the
world.
Yeah, he was one of the top directors in the world.
He lost his fastball too at a point. But
yeah,
lost the plot.
Well, he started making that wine and, you know, hanging out in his vineyard.
Well, they gave him $1 billion and then he went, well, fuck all this.
Yeah.
I'm going to make One from the Heart. And
One from the Heart killed his whole company.
Tucker and all that stuff. So
Tucker's kind of good.
But I mean, he made The Outsiders and Rumblefish, which were great. I mean,
actually, One from the Heart is great if you watch it without the sound on. It's a musical, so actually you got to hear it. But
I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know.
That one's worth seeing.
Coppola's career is very strange. And Sofia's had a nice career. I didn't see this, but I will. If I have an opportunity, I'll check it out.
Is it a great movie? No. But is it interesting? Yeah. You know what? And it stayed with me. I thought about it afterwards.
Okay.
So.
Well, sometimes that's the best thing, you know, is what stuck with you. And, you know, again, this is your favorites and not. I mean, I don't know what your criteria is. I'm just telling you, my criteria is. Favorite, although I will tell you, when I get into my list here, what you'll find is that I got a lot of craft in here. Meaning, if I couldn't decide between movies and I went like, oh, that one looked better or was shot better, I often went with that, I found this year. But anyway, here's a movie that actually is not an example of great craft, but great storytelling and certainly highly watchable. It's called The Big Sick with Kumail Nanjiani as the star and writer, co-writer of this. He wrote this. Now, this is the story of Kumail Nanjiani playing himself a true story of him as a young comedian in Chicago, and he meets a girl who gets sick. You know, they have a love affair, and you see all that. Then they kind of break up, and she gets ill, and he decides he's going to be. He feels guilty on some level, and wants to sort of stand by her side, and then meets her parents, which is are played by Ray Romano, who's actually very good in a dramatic turn. Ray Romano and Holly Hunter, and it goes from there. I won't spoil it for anyone else, but you know, it was co-written by Emily Gordon, who is the woman that's being played in here by Zoe Kazan and Camille. And it's heartwarming. It's funny. I thought the stand-up stuff was handled pretty well in this. Right?
It's a pretty accurate stand-up movie.
Stand-up movie?
Yes, absolutely.
It's on Amazon. They actually produce this thing as well. So if you have Amazon Prime, get your big sick for nothing right on there. It's fun. It's funny. It is heartwarming. Camille did a real nice job in this, and I kind of felt like there's always one year where you sort of get a big sort of breakthrough sort of comedy, you know, like almost like a like a train wreck with Amy Schumer one year, and this year I feel like this might be it, right?
Yeah, it didn't make my list, but that was mostly because I thought that the two stories didn't... There's two stories.
Right.
There's the courtship of Emily Gordon and his comedy career, and then there's his parents.
Right.
And I thought the stuff with the parents was kind of hacky.
Okay.
Now, I know he's a Pakistani guy who made the movie himself, wrote the movie. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Michael Showalter directed it. But it's that stuff, to me, there's a whole storyline. It really felt like two movies.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole storyline where...
Well, I think it is. I think if you watch this movie and didn't know the we're telling you what the twist is. This girl gets sick. It's in the title. But you could sit down not knowing that this woman gets sick at a point. Right? Couldn't you?
Sure.
And then you'd be like, holy shit, I couldn't believe where this went.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. And that's why
so
it's good.
I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I just felt, to me, the stuff with the parents and the Pakistani parents, they do a whole bit where they're setting him up with women.
Yeah. They're trying to do the arranged marriage of Camille.
And they kind of went to that well a few too many. They went back to that three or four more times than they should have, probably. Right. That was the only... that was the knock for me. I thought Holly Hunter was good, but she's Holly Hunter, so she's pretty much always
going to be good.
Holly Hunter and Ray Romano are Emily's parents, and that's an interesting dynamic they have there. Yeah, it just didn't quite make my list. But, yeah, I didn't love it as much as other people.
All right, so give us
But the comedy stuff is... You're right about that.
I think they did the stand-up
like
stuff.
Bo Burnham is his friend who's making it. Mm-hmm. And he's not, you know, they just, we know that all too well when like one of your friends kind of takes off and everybody else is still sitting at the open mic going, what happened?
Well, Camille showed them all now.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the movie about how I'm the frustrated guy sitting in the back, not having success, which is sort of ironic and great in a way. All right. Give us a number 14, Corey Hall.
Another moody gothic period piece. Which I think this was way under the radar for a lot of people, was My Cousin Rachel.
Okay. I do not even know what this is.
Yes. This is, stars Rachel Weisz.
Okay.
There's kind of a theme.
I'm a Rachel Weisz fan.
I think this was kind of a theme of love gone bad this year. Hmm. It seemed to pop up in a lot of movies or weird romances.
Hmm.
And this is adapted from a Daphne du Maurier book who was not a Victorian writer, but wrote in the 50s. But anyway, this is set in the olden days. Anyway, and it's like a gothic romance. This guy was raised by his uncle, his beloved uncle, and the uncle goes to Italy for his health and then doesn't return. But then his widow, Rachel Weisz, comes back to the manor estate, and This young fool, he's totally swept up by her and sort of falls for her. And you don't know really what her intentions are. If she's, you know, up to no good, she's always making tea. You don't know what's in the tea. But a really kind of compelling, another movie about like gender dynamics and relationship politics. And I think that was kind of a popular theme this year.
Well, we're going to, I think we're going to talk about that later with another movie.
I'm hinting, a couple of them.
I'm hinting, but. Yeah.
So I think that that seems to be where the zeitgeist is at. And I thought this was a really well done movie. I thought it was pretty compelling.
Yeah, it was directed by a guy named Roger Mitchell. And I don't have a lot. You can rent this, apparently.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know if it's streaming.
It came out in June of last year.
Yeah, I have it June 9.
Went over the middle of nowhere.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I've not seen it. But again, maybe I'll check it out.
I'm kind of a sucker for those kind of moody period pieces in England, which is weird. Mm. You'd think I wouldn't be going for that kind of movie. But sometimes some of those will get me.
Well, I want to promise our audience that there will be movies they've actually heard of coming up.
We're down at the bottom of the list.
Although the next one, I'm not sure if anyone saw this either, but at least you can see it. I know where you can see it. And that's on Netflix. It's a documentary called Get Me Roger Stone,
okay,
which is about Roger Stone, who is a political fixer. He's a Republican. He's was working for the Trump campaign at one point, but goes all the way back to, God, it's been a while since I've seen this documentary because it's been out for almost a year. I want to say he goes back to Nixon or Reagan or
yes.
I mean, way, 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 way back in the
like,
battle.
Like so many of the Republican power players, mm-hmm. he was part of the Nixon administration. Or,
yeah.
Or
so, goes back to Nixon. So anyway, Roger Stone, and you see all of the dirty tricks. You see a lot of this shot at the Republican convention last year. You can watch this and go, you could say, I don't want to watch this movie because I think Roger Stone is a dirtbag and a criminal. Mm. If you watch this movie, the movie shows you that Roger Stone is a dirtbag and a criminal. So don't have a political opposition to this and go, I'm a liberal, I can't watch this garbage. It's not propaganda for the Republicans. It really shows him what he is, and he admits what he is. I mean, that is the thing about Roger Stone that is sort of captivating, is that he admits he's a dirty player. He admits that they're up to no good.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and he shows his methods, and they also show, you know, some of the scandals he was embroiled in over the years. He had some, you know, his wife was, they were in a swingers magazine at one point, and there was some homosexuality things that came out about Roger Stone.
He's
quite a character.
He was a big shooter in he ran Jack Kemp's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big shooter in Republican politics, and then kind of his payback, he got outed as he and his wife had bought, this is back in the 90s, they bought ads in swinger magazines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all in the movie. Did you see it?
So I think what's kind of fascinating about this is that you see the things that he pulls were pulled on him. You know, it seems like he had dirty tricks pulled against him, pulled dirty tricks on people, and it all becomes part of the playbook.
It does. And a lot of the Trump stuff that you're hearing about, Manafort and all that, that's coming out now, is covered in the movie, too, about, you know, the firing of these people. So it's definitely...
By the way, the Trump whole campaign was a slow-motion train wreck.
Yeah.
That a lot of people who were paying attention saw coming.
Right.
Anyway,
there's still repercussions in the news and charges coming and investigations. Yeah. So this movie is...
I will
even though it was shot, you know, almost 2 years ago in bulk... It's still relevant today. I mean, definitely.
It's
on Netflix.
Yeah, they did. I watched a few. There was one called Boogeyman about Lee Atwater.
Okay, yeah. He was another guy.
Bush's guy.
Yeah.
And I hated that son of a bitch.
Right.
But it was an interesting documentary.
Yeah, right.
This one is pretty good, too. I would recommend
it. Yeah, okay. So that's Get Me Roger Stone, my number 14.
I kind of forgot about it, but I did too.
All right. Give us a number, lucky 13.
Boy, let's continue movies no one saw.
Yeah, it's your list.
This is a movie that no one saw. That's the first of three movies about Dunkirk that I have on my list.
Oh my
spoilers. Geez,
three movies about Dunkirk?
Yeah, this is called Their Finest. This is the one nobody saw.
No, I I'm right there with you. Their Finest.
This is a movie with it stars Bill Nighy. What is her name? The lead actress. Anyway,
well, I'll get it for you here.
Gemma Arterton.
Yes.
Who you will recognize her face.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. Jack Houston's in it.
I'm looking at this.
Yeah. Sam Claflin, who is also in My Cousin Rachel, is in this too.
Okay.
He's the lead.
Jake Lacy is in this, and Richard E. Grant, it says.
Yeah. So a lot of fun. This is about the British film industry during the war.
Okay.
And they basically, they're with all the men serving, they hire women to be the screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
to write the slop, as they call it, the women's dialogue. And then this woman ends up writing the whole script and is involved. And they're making a movie about Dunkirk.
Okay.
And then Bill Nighy is the kind of old faded star.
Yes.
That's trying to keep his career going.
I have the British one sheet.
There it is, right.
Which is, if you don't know what a British one sheet is, it's the same proportion, it's different proportions, and it's the other way.
Right.
Which makes sense for a movie to be in that shape, a movie poster. That's the shape of the movie screen. Yeah. That is a British, if you get into poster art,
mm-hmm.
these are more valued. People like these better in many cases.
Yeah, we're so used to the vertical rectangle.
Yeah. That's so anyway, yeah, they're fine. I haven't seen this. I would not have even taken a bet that this movie existed until today, but okay.
I thought it was a pretty clever sort of satire of the movie business and an interesting look at it, and also kind of had some moving stuff with the war and the effect it had on people. So I under the radar one, but I really liked it.
All right. Well, I haven't seen it, but maybe soon. All right, well, let's talk about a movie that... Here's a movie people might have actually seen in my number 13, and that is, I think, closing out the finest sci-fi blockbuster trilogy of our time, War for the Planet of the Apes.
Uh-huh.
Did you see?
I didn't see it.
Matt Reeves directed this, who directed the last one, now this movie, here's the thing about this one. I think, even though this is on my top pictures of the year, probably the weakest of the three Planet of the Apes movies that have come out recently, but still very good. This one is more of a prison film. You know, it's almost like, I don't want to say the greatest, but it's like, you know, there's a prison and an uprising of these apes. And it's also sort of, you know, in the second movie, the apes were sort of the bad guys. You know, like, it's a very weird what they did with these guys. You know, in the second movie, it was the humans against the apes, and you're sort of on the human side. And now in this one, the humans are bad. You know, the Woody Harrelson character, who's the lead human in this. And he's this warlord, and these apes are in this prison facility in the wintertime, and it all takes place at night in the snow. But again, when I talk about technical greatness, I'm not sure you'll see better effects. And I think this is nominated for visual effects, and it really deserves to win. It's up against Blade Runner, Guardians 2, The Last Jedi, and Kong Skull Island. But I'm telling you, these apes are amazing. And the motion capture that they do, there's even a new ape played by Steve Zahn, mm-hmm. who was entertaining. These movies are very well done. They've definitely ended this trilogy in a sense, although they do leave the door open for more apes movies, but they will be, you know, maybe not as centered around Caesar, because he's the ape that you see that James Franco has in the first one of these, mm-hmm. and you see it go. But it's very grim. It's not as much fun. I'm guessing it made less money. And what was the gross on this? Well, $490 million. I think there's going to be more apes movies.
Probably.
On a budget of $150, this is according to Wikipedia. You know, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. It's long. I think those apes movies, they did a great job. I mean, we both love the old Planet of the Apes movies. You could argue that the modern series, not as much fun as the 60s one, and you're not wrong.
Yeah, and that's,
you're not wrong.
That's why I didn't see this one.
But they're so, so well done, and they're good. They're good. I mean, they actually are. These are movies that
my ape like paws.
They don't get, you know, with the Marvel stuff, the Star Wars stuff, it gets cheesy in a way that these never did for me. These feel
as
sort
long
of
as
legit.
You, as long as you buy into intelligent apes that form a society.
But, you know, these feel more like 70s sci-fi than sort of what modern sci-fi feels like, even though the tone is different than but I mean, some of those Planet of the Apes movies, the old ones, the 60s and 70s ones, some of those are real dark.
Conquest of
so, you know,
I don't know, and maybe I'm just being a fuss budget old fan here, but I love the original Planet of the Apes movies unabashedly, and to me, when they're not riding horses, well, they're riding horses, but
they're doing everything.
They're not wearing clothes.
Some of them wear clothes now.
They're not building houses.
They do all that shit.
I just love that ape society in the first movie. You know?
No, but I mean, they've tried to say, because you can make apes that aren't people in suits, I think they've tried to take it further in the direction of what real apes would be capable of doing.
And I know the effects are great. The orangutan is great. Look at all this stuff. But that second one wasn't any fun for me.
No, the second one was... I thought the second one was a little bit of a misdirection. I think this one, maybe even less fun. Maybe this is too grim. I liked it. That's all I can say. I'm not saying it's for everyone, but, you know, because I think people now want, you know, there is a level of stupidity in their action movies. And I think the Planet of the Apes movies have largely avoided that stupidity. And I think it's for the better. I think it makes these movies, and you can have stupid action that's well done. And we're going to talk about those in a minute. At least from my list.
Well, Rampage doesn't come out.
Rampage is not out yet, but we will talk about a dumb blockbuster. And this one is not dumb, and I think to its detriment, but I'm telling you, the effects in this thing, you will not even know that these are effects. It's unbelievable what they've done with this. So anyway, that's my 13, War for the Planet of the Apes. You got to give us a 12. Corey
my
Hall,
12,
you're
and,
up.
And I, it's, my list is confusing me. I'm really
well. Did your list?
This is a movie. I normally wouldn't even like a movie like this.
Yeah,
but I went with it. It's called Wind River.
Yes, Wind River.
And this is really God. It is talk about dark and bleak.
Yes,
It's not a it's a western, but it's like a mountain.
It is cops and robber. Well, it's. It's an investigative thriller, I think, is the best way to say it. By the way, I have this. I'm supposed to steal your thunder. This is my number four movie.
Okay.
I really liked it. So anyway, yeah, Wind River.
It's set in Wyoming on a Indian reservation kind of community. Well, it's a town.
Yeah.
But there's a large native population there.
What's a it's a western? Yeah, I mean
it is kind of, but it not in the kind of it's a northern western like a mountain.
Right.
In this Wyoming town, and you've got a murder that happens, and Jeremy Renner is like a game warden.
Yeah,
and then Elizabeth Olsen as the least likely FBI agent of all time. I will say
exactly,
that.
But she's good.
If I have a quibble with the movie, it's like didn't quite buy her as an FBI agent.
But, no, I agree with that, but. I thought she did a good job in this.
In a way, this is kind of procedural, like Chinatown almost.
Well, okay, there is a trilogy of movies that this is part of. It's called the Sicario Trilogy, which is Sicario, Hell or High Water, which we both loved from last year.
Yeah.
And now this, even though there's a new Sicario, I guess that blows up the trilogy, but there's a Sicario, a direct sequel to Sicario coming out.
Taylor Sheridan.
He's the right, I think he directed this one. But he had written the other ones. But it's great. You should see this.
And again, it's not even the kind of movie I generally gravitate towards.
Yeah.
I really don't like grim, if there's rapes and things in movies, I generally don't care for them. But this one is really well done, very suspenseful.
Yeah.
John Bernthal's in it. Well done.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really,
I don't want to say any more about it to give away.
It is. I mean, it's... You could say this is cowboys and Indians in a sense. I mean, it is sort
to
of
some degree,
a modern version of that. There's a showdown and all that. No. But, you know, if you like a mature, I mean, Hell or High Water, I think, is still probably a better movie than this.
Yeah, I like that.
If you had to see one, go see that. But Wind River's great. It's really,
well,
really
Hell
well
or High
done.
Water had a little sense of humor to it.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Which this does not.
No, this is, in fact, talk about grim. I mean, geez.
It's a
this movie gets grim.
Dry,
yeah.
bleak movie. But yeah. It drew me into that world. It drew me into that little town.
Listen. Yeah. If you can't have an Indian Western without Graham Greene.
He's in everything.
He's in fucking everything.
He's great, though.
He's great. So put him in everything. It's just really well done.
Him and Wes Studi. Those are your two, like,
go
to.
Do I know Wes Studi?
You look up Wes Studi. You'd totally recognize him.
How do you spell Studi?
S-T-U-D-I.
Wes Studi.
You'd recognize him immediately.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
And he's in this too, right? Is he in this?
I think he is
in this.
If you make a movie about a native tribe, Wes Studi's in it.
All right, anyway.
Pretty much.
Wes Studi. Oh, maybe he's not in this
one.
He's not in this one.
But Graham Greene certainly is.
Graham Greene. It's Wind River is, like I said, it's my number four movie, and you guys should see it. By the way, interestingly, you know, Weinstein, TWC, the Weinstein Company, released this. Now, apparently, and I don't know the full story. I'm looking on Wikipedia here. Okay, the home media rights were acquired by Lionsgate. I believe that the filmmakers were really pissed at Harvey about the whole thing, about his scandal. And so they kind of stood up to him and said, hey, we want our movie back. Right. And let's applaud them for that. Just go see this movie for that reason, all right? We're in River. You can rent it now. I saw it in the theater, but it's real good. So, yeah, go watch it. All right, let's give you my number 12, which is a movie that I know we've both seen. I think we've both reviewed it on this show and not that long ago. And I know that this is the movie when you tell people about a movie, they go, oh, my God, I want to see this. I don't know how many people are actually seeing this, but I've yet to meet a person who says, oh, I don't. Or yeah. Everyone that I've had told that I saw this said, I want to see this, or, yeah, that looks good. And that's I, Tanya.
All right. Well, that is
the movie that everyone
wants. That's my number three.
All right. So let's get to, I'm going to put that on your number three for I, Tanya.
There you go.
Yeah. I, Tanya is very well done. And like I said, we've reviewed it on here. The acting's great. I mean, Margot Robbie, Allison Janney, almost the shoe-in for best supporting actress in this.
Yeah.
You know,
apologies to Laurie Metcalf. And that's a great performance, too. But
yeah.
Janney's is a little showier.
Yeah. When I look at that category, and we'll go through this later, but you almost by default have to give it to, I mean, it's so well done. She's so great as the mom. Just a good movie, you know. It's historical, but it's done in sort of that semi-fictional black comedy kind of thing. Little Coen brothers, yeah. Little Scorsese.
I think it's
great.
I think something was kind of missed on this. A few people were upset, including a beat writer for the Oregonian that had covered her back in the day, or one of the papers out there. He was upset that they're like, look, this is basically giving a free pass to Tonya Harding, who they thought was guilty.
Yeah.
And wasn't a reputable person, or was basically a pile of garbage. And the movie says, right, I think something that people missed about this is in the opening credits, in the title role, it says, these are the stories that Tanya and Jeff told us, and we don't know if we trust them.
Right, yeah.
You know, basically the movie declares that they're unreliable narrative.
The movie is flashbacks. You know, they are sitting, direct camera, addressing the camera directly, telling their story. We don't know if it's true or not. There you go. It's very well done. They did a good job.
I think it was brilliantly done.
Yeah.
I, you know, when I first heard about it, I said, no, Margot Robbie is not Tonya Harding.
Too hot.
You can't possibly ugly her up enough to look like Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
Who, not that Tonya Harding was a beast, but there was a difference between her and Nancy Kerrigan.
But, you know,
and that was part of the dynamics, was that Nancy was prettier and conventionally prettier.
Well, also just the sense of style and that, you know, there is money involved in those costumes. And part of what you're judged on in figure skating on, you know, a competitive level is what does your costume look like? What does your hair look like? Those all actually are part of what you're judged on. And Tonya Harding was considered, you know, the most athletic, technical best skater in the world at that time, which involved, you know, Katarina Witt and Oksana Bayul and Nancy Kerrigan, all these people.
I wish I had the drop button right now.
Oksana, yeah, we love
Oksana. Slice the banana.
Yeah, Oksana was great. This is an old reference, but
you're the greatest entertainer in our business.
We love Oksana on this show. And Oksana won. She beat both of them in the Olympics, Oksana. But anyway, I, Tanya's just really well done. It's funny. It's dramatic. You know, I don't believe they were trying to tell the real story by the book. Anyway, they were trying to make a good movie, and it's better for it. And Margot Robbie, and by the way, and look, Margot Robbie, they didn't make her. There's nothing you can do to Margot Robbie where she wouldn't be more attractive than Tonya Harding. You know, it's just
hard to ugly her, but she did a great job in the role.
She did, yeah. She's well.
You were sympathetic to her, and you believed in her story, and you saw the horrible abuse she had. But this movie also, it does go to very dark places and grim places, but it's got an energy and a sense of humor and a lightness to it.
Yeah.
This is like one of the most entertaining movies I can imagine.
Yeah,
you know, it clips from, it runs at 100 miles an hour. It hits the, it sticks the landing, hits all the hits.
And anyone would
although,
like
although, I will say the one knock is that the CGI, when they put Margot Robbie's face on a stunt skier, a skater, they farmed it out to an Indian CGI company.
I don't know how they. I mean, this is not a big budget movie, and
that's what I'm saying. They didn't have a budget.
They the effects of her the skating, which actually are very well done, aside from the face.
I know.
You go, ooh, they.
But it's like
they,
the one
you can tell
little
that's
seam
not her.
That cracks in the movie.
You can tell it's not her at times. But
I loved it.
Great. Yeah, I Tonya was good. So. Give us a number 11, Corey.
Number 11 is an animated film.
Oh my goodness.
But not the Coco or you know. Book of the, this is Loving Vincent.
Loving Vincent.
Yes.
I've not seen. Tell us about
this.
It.
Is in the style kind of Waking Life.
Okay.
That kind of
rotoscoping.
Rotoscope. Although they claim that they painted every frame on this.
Well, all right.
And so it's a fully painted movie.
Because it's about Vincent Van Gogh?
Yes. Okay. Yes. But it has the look of a moving Vincent Van Gogh painting. And it's just visually amazing and mesmerizing, and just on the sheer technical ability and merit alone, the story's decent too. I mean, but it's captivating to watch.
Yeah, they're billing it on the Loving Vincent website as the world's first painted, fully painted animated feature film. Yes.
It was made in Poland too, which is kind of interesting.
It was made in Poland.
But 65,000 frames is an oil painting on canvas.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And they had a team of 125 painters working on it. When you see it in motion, it's kind of amazing. It really you'll see his famous paintings like Starry Night and, you know, all of these things as real settings that the characters walk through and places and environments, and it's pretty amazing.
It said it was a team of 125 painters that put this together. And there's some big names that did some of the acting in this.
Chris
O'Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd is the
Sorcerer Ronan.
He's the postman.
Yeah.
You know, there's a famous Van Gogh did a series of portraits, and this one's actually at the DFT.
Okay,
is the postmaster Roulant. And Chris O'Dowd is there as the guy, and he delivers the letter to his brother Theo. And this is after Van Gogh dies. But anyway, it's beautifully done. It's really a cool experience, and I think it should have been seen in a theater.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to see where you even see this thing, and Google's not helping me here all that much. But
it did play the Maple.
Okay, you can, let's see. Well, it's available on DVD and for rental, of course. Now, this is also nominated for Best Animated Feature.
Yeah.
So it is up against Coco and all
I would
the
vote
kiddie
for
stuff.
It. So. I would vote for it, but I'm guessing that Coco is going to take that one.
Well, you never know. You never know. But
it
I didn't see...
It won't be the Boss Baby, I'll tell you that much.
I did not see Loving Vincent, but that's good. You know, Vincent Van Gogh deserves a movie. You know, I mean, that's cool. People can appreciate that.
Take a look at the trailer and you'll realize you'll get
it.
Oh,
I'm sure. I think I would like this. I just haven't had a chance to see it. So, but I'm going to tell you about another artist who maybe is underappreciated in his lifetime. And when he dies, I think more people will come to him and maybe there'll be museums dedicated to his art and his
MC
career.
Sampler.
Boy, you just step on my fucking joke, man. I was talking about the Gilbert Gottfried documentary. Go see. Why do you fucking you step on it with a lame joke that nobody gets, and then my brilliant joke, which was about to come out of my mouth, you step on. See, I give you enough snack food that you can snack while I'm doing my build-up, but you don't even do that. By the way, have you had the peanut butter ho-ho yet?
No, I have not. I won't.
Should we take a minute and eat a peanut butter ho-ho?
Sure, why don't we...
Now that you... we'll step away. We'll clean the palate of you wrecking my joke. Because the... And Gilbert would want this, I think, as a guy... As someone who we're friendly with... To talk about Gilbert Gottfried's documentary with a peanut butter. Have you seen the peanut butter?
This is our this is our relationship to Gilbert Gottfried. Who?
Yeah.
Did I meet you?
Oh. Oh yeah.
He might go. Oh, the he remember you more
because
from the Juggalo thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can't remember the last time I had a ho ho.
Look, as I've said many times.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, as we're looking at a picture of Vincent Van Gogh, Europe being the epicenter of culture, historically, globally, every great work of art, museum, literature, music One thing we have culturally over the Europeans is our embrace of chocolate and peanut butter technology.
Yes, we've done a good job with that.
I keep trying to tell them, lay off the hazelnut, try a peanut butter.
Uh-huh.
But I don't even know. I think I kind of want the traditional cream.
I think I agree with you. I think these aren't that good. I think you might get the consolation prize as taking the box of peanut butter Ho-Hos home with you.
Don't get me wrong. It's like a fudge cake thing.
Yeah.
It's like a peanut butter chocolate cake
thing. I put two of these on my plate. I don't even think I want that other one.
I mean, look, it's good, mm-hmm. but it's not better than a regular Ho-Ho.
Yeah, there's something about the sugar rush of that cream in the original Ho-Ho
mm-hmm.
that really hits you. And this one is a little more subtle. It's not tremendously peanut buttery.
Well, the savoriness of the peanut butter gets a little absorbed in the chocolate.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll review it all, folks. We'll review obscure art films nobody saw and Hostess chocolate peanut butter.
Yeah, I'm a little unsure on this one. But here's something I'm not unsure about. Gilbert, the documentary by Neil Berkley about comedian Gilbert Gottfried. I think we've reviewed it on this show before. We both really liked it, I know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, definitely see this. It's on Hulu now, as a matter of fact. I own the Blu-ray because I'm a nut.
Now,
but it is now on Hulu.
There's
a really funny commentary on the Blu-ray as well, if you get that.
Did this actually get released?
Well, according to Wikipedia, the box office gross was $8,362. So my guess is...
And that's kind of why I... Because I just... I got... You had a copy and I watched it.
Yeah, and I got it. The DVD or the Blu-ray, you know, that came out as soon as they were talking about it.
Yeah.
So it's not like there was some time... I mean, I think it probably played for a week in New York and L.A. and then that was it. So... you know, and that's how a lot of documentaries are. That's why you can't see them. But but Hulu is distributing this, and if you have Hulu, watch it on there. It's great. I mean, you see Gilbert and his family. You hear Gilbert's got two little kids. You find out all about his wife, how he met his wife. You see highlights of Gilbert's career. You find out the controversy over Gilbert's, you know, his problems with Aflac and the tsunami, and you get that whole backstory, and it's really fascinating. Gilbert's one of a kind.
That's true.
They broke the mold when they made Gilbert. He's one of the funniest comics you'll ever see live, and you see that in the documentary as well. And you know, it's what else can I tell you? It gets the comedy right. It gets the road right. I mean, you see Gilbert taking the bus to gigs, which I think he was just going to Philadelphia. They try to make it seem like he takes a bus to all of his gigs. I don't think that's
he's not taking a bus to Cleveland.
No, I'm sure he flies. But, you know, you see Gilbert on a cruise ship doing a cruise ship, which is funny. It's really well done. It's heartwarming. You know, you may think, well, Gilbert's just this annoying guy we see on this show. But all of Hollywood is in this. I think what Whoopi Goldberg's interviewed. I think Penn Jillette is interviewed in this. A lot of famous people are... Bill Burr. Who else was interviewed in this? I'm trying to remember who all. Oh, Arsenio. I have the list here. Arsenio Hall, Howie Mandel, Jeffrey Ross, Jim Norton, Louis Black, Dave Attell. You see this relationship with his sister and his family. His sister was a famous New York City street photographer, and I thought that was heartwarming as well. A really, really well done documentary about show business. A guy that we both know and both like. So go see Gilbert.
Yeah. Absolutely. And in terms of the getting the other side of him and the whole other, the things you don't see, because the first time I interviewed Gilbert and, you know, he came on the phone and was like, hi, how are you? And I just went like, wow, you know, the whole veneer fell away.
Mm-hmm.
But this shows you what a sweet, lovely man he is in his own weird, borderline autistic, broken way.
The eccentricities, the hotel soaps and shampoos under the bed and stuff that he collects.
But that's why, that's probably why Gilbert is so brilliant and funny, is he just does not, he's not wired to see the world the way people do.
And that's what makes for a great comedian.
Yeah, and he's a 100% authentic and original.
Yeah, definitely. A good movie, good documentary, go see it. It's on Hulu, or you can rent it. Gilbert. Now, give us a number 10, Corey.
Number 10 is Darkest Hour.
Darkest Hour,
which Gary Oldman is that's my, you know, if you ever hear like sports radio, the totes that will have like, you know, I'll give you my top five NFL picks of the week, NCAA college football bonus special, you know, bracket busters, This is my Gary Oldman is a lock to win
Best Actor, for Winston Churchill in this. Yeah,
he won the Golden Globe. Seems pretty much impossible he wouldn't win.
Yeah.
For the Academy Award. And it's a great performance. He is buried under piles of latex.
Yeah.
So I would maybe argue that Daniel Day-Lewis didn't have to be buried under piles
of latex. Yeah, I mean, he certainly doesn't look like Gary Oldman in this, and he looks like Churchill.
You mostly forget Gary Oldman is there.
Yeah, you kind of do. I saw it, and I liked it. It is nominated for Best Picture this year as well. It just didn't make my top 15. It's a good movie. I mean, look. You see him.
I think a lot of people felt the movie itself wasn't as good as the performance.
I was surprised it was nominated for Best Picture over some other things, but
I think the movie's a little better than people give it credit for.
It's a good movie. Yeah,
it really is paced well, shot well. But it's just such a monster. It's a whale of a performance.
Yeah, I mean it's Winston Churchill coming into power. You see him in the Parliament, and you see his rise, and then you see that he was not well liked. By the public, or
Europe is falling.
Yeah, right.
The British and French armies are being pushed back.
Yeah.
As he's coming to power, the whole thing's about to collapse.
Yeah,
and they were on the precipice of annihilation. Yeah.
And you see Dunkirk and sort of the mastermind. You know, if you watch this and the movie Dunkirk, you see the same events from two different sides. You know, you see it from London. In Churchill in the bunker, and then you see the soldiers on the ground and the guys with the boats who came over. So, yeah, I mean, it's well done. You know, I'm not saying everybody's going to enjoy a movie about Winston Churchill standing in front of a bunch of white guys and giving speeches. I mean, it was a hugely important moment in world history, and of course, the history of England and World War II. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well done. But yeah, I mean, and Gary Oldman, if he wins, he deserves it. So Darkest Hour is good.
There you go.
I like it. All right. Let me give you a number nine here. Number nine. Cause we talked about another real life event, more real life things. And go, I'm looking at your listing. How many of the stuff is based on real life? Most of your list so far is, and I don't know if this one you even saw, but it's on my list. It's based on real life. It also takes an I, Tanya-esque approach to like, making a real life event into black comedy, and it's a very good movie, ironically about the worst movie ever made. It's called The Disaster Artist, directed by James Franco, who apparently won't be winning many awards this season for other reasons, but it's well done. It's the story of Tommy Wiseau and his buddy Greg and the making of the movie The Room, and I thought it was very entertaining. Now, if you're wondering, would I like this because I haven't seen The Room, this is what I'll tell you. I think I reviewed this on the show already and said you don't need to see The Room. The guy who was the co-writer of The Room, I forget his name, was on Gilbert's podcast on the bonus episode. He did a couple with Gilbert and
Greg
Franken. Yeah, I forget his name. But anyway, he was on, and he said, well, here's our approach. If you've seen The Room, this works as a sequel to The Room. If you haven't seen The Room, it works as a prequel to The Room. So you can see this and then see The Room and you'll be fine. If you've already seen The Room, you can see Disaster Artist and you'll follow along. Really good performances by James Franco, Seth Rogen. Dave is his brother in real life, Dave Franco. But
Greg Sestero.
He's playing Greg Sestero, which is weird to see brothers playing guys who aren't brothers. But I thought Dave did a nice job as well. And a lot of other guys you see in this, you know, you're going to see your, oh, by who are all the other guys?
Yeah, you know, by the way,
a lot of comedians, a lot of cameos. Judd Apatow shows up for a minute.
When your brother is also an actor and a successful one, not like one of the Murray brothers where there's like, but you know what? The Murray brothers would play Bill's brothers.
Yeah, they
like
could
in
play
Scrooge,
absolutely.
Like
yeah.
In Scrooged, he's got his brother playing his dad and his other brother playing his brother.
Yeah.
Makes sense. There's some movie, I think it might have come out already, but it's like Owen Wilson and Ed Helms are brothers who are looking for their real father.
Yeah.
And like Terry Bradshaw's in it. And they go knocking on doors looking for the guy who's their real father.
All right.
Where was Luke Wilson?
And that's
you couldn't
good,
get friggin'
I,
Luke
I
Wilson?
Guess you can't.
You can't get both Wilsons?
All right, so here's some of these people are only, you know, some of these people play the actors that were in The Room, and that includes Jackie Weaver. That includes Zac Efron, Nathan Fielder, who I love from Nathan For You, is one of the guys that's in the room. The girl, what's the girl's name? Ari Grainer, who was in I'm Dying Up Here. She played kind of the Boozler character. She plays the lead woman in the room. Allison Brie plays Greg Sestero's girlfriend, who is Dave Franco's actual wife.
Yeah.
Allison Brie. Yeah. Paul Scheer and Jason Mantzoukas play two of the guys who help with the technical stuff. It's very well done. Bryan Cranston shows up.
Paul Scheer, by the way, is friends.
And some of these guys are just talking about the movie.
He's just lucky to be friends with everybody in comedy.
Yeah, he kind of
and
is.
He gets thrown in a movie. He played Paul Schaefer in that National Lampoon.
Oh, yeah,
movie.
Yeah.
And actually the funniest scene in that movie.
Okay.
But anyway.
But yeah, it's and you see some of these people like Danny McBride and J.J. Abrams talking about The Room, where they're not in the movie.
They're playing themselves.
They're playing themselves, discussing The Room. I didn't think those were terribly effective. But in the end credits of this, did you see this, by the way, or no?
Yeah, I didn't.
Okay, you did.
Because I'm boycotting the Tommy Wiseau industrial complex.
That's fine, yeah. But again, you can see this movie, like Get Me Roger Stone, and go, Tommy Wiseau's an asshole, and you're going to walk out and go, hey, it's a movie about how, this is a movie about how Tommy Wiseau was an asshole.
Well, I also kind of find James Franco to be an insufferable asshole.
Well, the movie about how James Franco is an asshole has yet to been made.
That's coming
but
soon.
But that will be coming soon.
Will Dave Franco star as James Franco?
You and I will play the Franco brothers. That'll be the biggest insult right there.
Sign us up.
Well, I guess I'm James because I'm older, right?
Get to make out with an actual.
Wait a minute.
Allison
that means
Brie.
You're Dave and you get to make out with
Allison Brie.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, well,
I'll end up making out with Rebel Wilson.
Yeah,
and
I was
going
to say
Brie.
We're going to get a big fat lady to play Allison Brie, though, because.
Amy Schumer as Allison Brie.
Believe me, I'd make out with Allison Schumer playing herself. Sure, are you kidding me? She got married, by the way. She's off the market.
What happened there?
Look at that.
Like a surprise.
Oh, my God.
She pregs? What's going on?
I don't know what's going on.
You know, Aniston's available, though. So
Aniston is out there, guys.
Blow her phone.
Go get that.
Go get them digits.
Chase that down. All right, give us a number 9, Corey.
But, look, I'll get around to the disaster.
You see disaster, right? It's fun. I mean,
I just hate that guy.
It's a fun date movie. Fun date movie.
Well,
I think I saw it by myself, but it's a fun date movie.
I have this bizarre thing with The Room where people love it because it's this horrible movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's not make the guy who made it a star.
Well,
because he's an asshole who has no talent.
The movie does not show him having talent. I mean, that's the thing about
the deification of Ed Wood was posthumous.
Yeah.
So we weren't rewarding Ed Wood for big. Actually, I like Ed Wood better as a filmmaker.
But, you know, they do cover all of, you know, the midnight screenings and all of that is in the movie. So if you're, you know, I don't know. I think you're having some political objection to
it. Yes,
in a way that's sort of unfair, especially if you're going to be a critic. You should probably not have those sort of things.
Look, if I had reviewed it officially, it may have been different.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to put my own dime into it.
It's very well done. Right, give us a number. Number 9.
My number 9 is a film that really fell off everybody's radar.
Oh, my God.
And when it came to awards season, and maybe it didn't quite deserve it, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Battle of the Sexes.
Battle of the Sexes, yes. We talked about this, I think, last week a little bit.
Starring Emma Stone and Steve Carell as Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs and their famous... It was a stunt that turned into kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
In, what, 1973? And I thought the leads were great in this. I thought those were two really good performances. They both characters came to life. You see Bobby Riggs is a washed up former Wimbledon champion who's, you know, in his mid-50s and kind of a joke. And he makes his money hustling guys at tennis clubs and being a tennis pro and sort of living off the largesse of rich guys and gambling. But he doesn't really have a direction.
Yeah, kind of a troubled, flawed, kind of a huckster.
An alcoholic.
Professional tennis player, but yeah, you know.
Shines people on for, basically dances for his money.
Mm-hmm.
And Billie Jean King was at the top of her game as one of the top women players in the world at the time. And it parallels her story. She splits off and forms their own league because they're not getting paid properly by the WTA. And So you get both of their stories paralleled up to this match.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really well done. I thought Emma Stone was brilliant in this part. She has a near the end of the movie, she's got this crying scene that's as good as anything I've seen her do, where it all kind of comes together. And anyway,
well,
I liked it a lot. I thought it was funny and warm. And as for a biopic, was well done. You see Billie Jean King also dealing with her sexuality.
Yeah, there's a lot of lesbianism. There's a lot of...
She was married at the time and had a husband. And
that was, I think, some of the best stuff in the movie.
Yeah.
But I also think it's one of the problems with this movie is that Bobby Riggs stuff, if you see the real footage, and I know there's an ESPN 30 for 30, or is there an HBO documentary? There's one of them where there's documentaries been about this. The real event, unfortunately, to me, is way more entertaining than this movie. And that's, I think, the flaw in this movie is that, I know we've talked about that in regards to the National Lampoon thing. It's just, you know, just watch the documentary. It's better than this real thing. Emma Stone's good. Steve Carell's good. It's very well done. When I look at this Disaster Artist and I, Tonya, they're both sort of taking the same approach to a historical thing.
I think I, Tonya's way better.
I thought those other movies did it better than this. But,
no, that's why it's...
Okay.
That's why it's number 9 on my list. But,
yeah,
you know.
I thought, to me, I was excited to see this, and then when I saw it, I kind of went like, eh.
Look, I will say they kind of overstepped their bounds a little bit on the projecting what it meant.
Yeah, it's...
They made it seem like...
Yeah.
She made it seem like she freed the slaves or something.
But don't you think if they had made it a little more I, Tonya, and made it a little more over the top, and not as sort of...
It's
like,
a little earnest.
It's a little earnest in a way that I think the real event was a little more fun, and so it hurts us. Sarah Silverman, very good in this. Bill Pullman in this. Cumming.
It's a good cast. Everybody's...
There's a woman. Have you ever... Elizabeth Shue? I don't know who that is, but there's somebody called... she must be new to the business. Anyway, go see... if you liked... I think that story of Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King is fascinating. And it's something that really couldn't even... It was definitely a thing that happened. It was of its time. It couldn't happen today. And so it's kind of an amazing story. I just don't know this movie tells the story that well.
I'm with you. We've been plagued by documentaries that are better than the biopics of them. But that could just be the problem with biopics. That's why I thought I, Tonya was a quantum step ahead of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think this was solid and overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think in this case, though, I think the real event, I think the movie is better than the documentary in my next movie. So I'm going to say right there. So go ahead. And if you have a problem, you can get a hold of me. Find me over on joelradio.net. Drop a comment. Because I'm going to say that the movie about the real event is better than the documentary, and that's called Kong Skull Island. Because in the 70s, in the midst of Vietnam...
Oh my God.
A ragtag group of adventurers went out to a small island and found a giant gorilla.
You know what? I totally thought this came out in 16.
Kong Skull Island? Yeah, it was like last... I have it here. No, it was like in the spring. It was like at a weird time.
You know what?
February 27th. It opened in March. It debuted on February 28th. It opened in March. So
I had this in my mind.
Yeah.
As a 16 like Christmas release,
mm-hmm.
and I loved Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, it was great.
And now I want to take something off my list.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, Kong Skull Island.
I would have bounced their finest right out of there for Kong Skull Island.
Kong Skull Island.
Shit, I completely forgot about this.
I've done the math on this. It is 78.5 times better than Peter Jackson's King Kong.
78.5
times
it's
better.
A little high. I feel like such an idiot.
No, this is a good... This is, again, when I talk about dumb movie, and like, Planet of the Apes is a little earnest and a little serious and dark. This thing's just over-the-top fun.
Yeah.
It's as dumb as any movie ever made, but yet it completely works. It's not trying to be smart.
All right, I'm officially listing this as my 16.
Officially.
Because
it was the year Corey forgot Gone Girl from his top 10.
You know what?
And we did the whole list. And you're like, oh, fuck, I forgot about Gone Girl.
No, I fucking forgot.
Well,
Kong Skull Island.
That's why you did do your research.
It was a 17 movie.
You do your research. Keep an ongoing list. That's helpful, too. But no, Kong Skull Island's great. Tom Hiddleston, Samuel L. Jackson, John Goodman, Brie Larson. You know, it's just John C. Reilly is really fun in this.
I thought the decision to set this in the Vietnam era was brilliant.
It was pretty great, yeah.
Because we've never seen Vietnam guys versus monsters. That was a good mashup thing.
And
it is a silly, goofy, over the top movie, but they made it intentionally that way.
Right.
I mean, what does Tom Hiddleston's character do?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's the I'm Mr. Competent. Everybody else loses their head. Yeah. He's like, I've got my shit together guy.
Well, he's the, you know, he's the alpha male.
Yeah.
I'm in charge. You know, kind of guy. Well, and then the other, you know, and then you have sort of the rogue, you know, the military guys are bad, but he's sort of this, you know, he's the adventurer, right? He's not the military guy. He's the,
he's some kind of weird.
And then Brie Larson is a photographer, if I remember correctly. It's really fun. Again, I remember all the details.
John C. Reilly's great.
Yeah, it's if you want a popcorn fun movie. This one's about as good as any of them.
You know, and considering what
made a ton of money, surprisingly, $566 million.
Considering what a fan I am of giant monster movies,
yeah,
the fact that I forgot this on my list, I feel like such a dummy.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those that more it wasn't a giant. You know, it's not Black Panther. It's not one of those things that everyone ran out and saw opening weekend. But everyone that sees this likes it. And if you like a big, dumb monster movie, and again, boy, should I give these minor spoiler on this? You know what I mean?
Well, maybe not.
There's a stinger, but it's a good.
We'll see more of Kong.
Exactly, and I'm excited for more Kong. They did a great job with this.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, you fucked that up, man. Good movie, though.
Yeah, I loved it.
Jordan Vogt Roberts. What did he make? I looked him up before. Yeah, he just made a bunch of like little. He made a movie called "The Kings of Summer."
You know, Joel, I think maybe I was acting too much like a film critic on this.
Yeah, that was a coming of age movie.
Well, I think sometimes I act a little bit too much when I make these. I'm thinking like what I would have done as an official film critic.
Well,
and then sometimes I think I would leave a movie like Kong Skull Island, which was fun.
But I say. That's why I go with what do I recommend people see? Sure. And I've left things off of this list, which were great, Oscar worthy, all of that stuff. But I'm going, you know, would my mom and dad want to see? I don't want to give away stuff, but you know what I mean? Like there's one movie in particular that I liked a lot or I thought was excellent and super well made that I'm not recommending to people because I go, you know, you're not going to really enjoy this. And I don't know that I really enjoyed it all that much, even though I respect it. But Kong Skull Island, everyone's going to like.
Yeah, no, that's fun.
You're not going to not like Kong Skull Island. You're not.
It's good fun.
Now, I think we've gotten a little mixed up in our numbers. So you've already given me a 9 and I haven't. Oh, no. 9 was Disaster Artist. Oh, yeah. You know what? I screwed up my numbers. I apologize.
I thought your Kong was 8.
No, my Kong was 10 and Disaster Artist was 9. I skipped one. I apologize.
No.
But you anyway, give us an 8 and we'll be back on track.
All right. It's my number 8 is Lady Bird.
Lady Bird. Corey, my number 8 is Lady Bird.
Wow.
Whoa.
Bing, 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 bing.
What did we win?
Woo! hopefully a handy from Greta Gerwig.
Well, I'll take a handy from Saoirse Ronan, and then we'll go from there.
Well, she's got two arms. She can do us both. Look, no, I'm sorry to disrespect the talented artist. Greta Gerwig, the queen of mumblecore, who did all those movies, all those in the mid-2000s, they were the New York hipster kind of thing. Then she graduated to bigger projects.
Well, she did the Arthur remake.
She did the Arthur remake.
Yeah, she's been in some bad movies
She did
bad mainstream movies, good indie movies.
She did Greenberg with Ben Stiller, which I love.
Yeah, that was pretty good, yeah.
But yeah, what is it? Hannah Takes the Stairs.
Yeah.
There's
a million of them.
Yeah, and some of the people from Girls were in those movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Duplass brothers, kind of community. So that's Jo Swanberg. She came out of that mumblecore realm, but she's become a very interesting actress, although kind of a little limited range. But this is her directorial debut, and it's, I think it's a really sweet movie. It's a really lovely little movie.
Yeah, coming of age movie.
Yeah.
You know, a girl in high school. Now, she's at a Catholic high school, right?
Yes.
And so very strict, and she wants to get away. She wants to get out of her small town. She wants to go to the East Coast. She wants to go to college there. Yeah, I mean, this is again, this is a movie hard to hate. You watch this, it's just good. It's just, it is what it is. Is it something you haven't seen before? Probably not, but it's well done.
No, but it's very entertaining and moving. And yeah, there's a great relationship between her mom, Laurie Metcalf, and Saoirse Ronan. And Tracy Letts plays the dad, who's kind of the good cop.
Right.
And he tries to stay mellow between the two.
Yes.
And she wants to get out of Sacramento and go live her life. Yeah. And
you have the king of 2017, Timothy Chalamet.
Yes.
Who was nominated for Best Actor for Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Will that be on our list, Corey? You will have to tune in and find out. Beanie Feldstein. Beanie. You know, Beanie
is Jonah Hill's
sister. Who you go, boy, that's the female Jonah Hill. And you go, oh, it's Jonah Hill's sister. Beanie Feldstein is kind of the fat friend. But yeah, it's really well done. It's still in theaters if you want to see Lady Bird.
Yeah.
You know, again, indie movie, coming of age. You kind of know what you're getting, but boy, they did a good job with it. I actually have a coming of age teenage movie that I thought was a little better than this year, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay. But I thought Lady Bird was great. It's my number 8 as well. So hey, what can I tell you?
All right.
Well, let's. So what am I doing here? I'm giving you a 7. It sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me give you a 7 here. Here's my number. My number 7 movie for this year is Logan. The number 7 movie, the best superhero movie of the year, Corey. Logan.
Yeah.
The Adventures of Wolverine. Is it the final Wolverine movie, Corey, would you say? Logan? I hope so. I don't know. But it was really well done. And maybe, and look, I'm not a big superhero movie guy. But maybe because you take this movie and you make it more of a road movie, more of a drama, maybe rooted more in the real world, and yet still it's, Wolverine having superpowers, making it R-rated, all of those things.
You have a very limited... We have a very limited cast of mutants. There's only really, you know, 3 of them.
Yeah.
And
it was great. I mean, again, came out early last year. Maybe a lot of people forgotten about it by now. But, you know, I mean, when I looked at all of them, you know, I saw, I don't know, 4 or 5 superhero movies last year. I mean, nothing was better than this. James Mangold directed this, who has made a lot of really good movies over the years, James Mangold. So it was not, what else did he make? He did make The Wolverine, but he also made 310 to Yuma, Walk the Line, Girl Interrupted, Copland. So he's a guy with a little bit of pedigree. You know, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Great. You know, Stephen Merchant was great in this. Felt a little like, you know, like a Terminator 2 kind of vibe. You know, it felt a little bit of a throwback, and yet felt like a movie that could be, if you don't like superhero movies, this is just a good movie. So, I don't know. I like Logan. I don't have any other... I'm trying to see if I have anything that would even be considered a popcorn picture above this, and I don't think I do.
Well, below it, you've got Kong Skull Island.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I've got Kong Skull Island and Planet of the Apes on here, but yeah, this I thought was the best popcorn picture, quote-unquote, of the year, and did great. Made, what did this make? $600 million on a $97 million budget, so there you go. It says Hugh Jackman has played Wolverine for 17 years. Yeah, I'd say that's long enough. But Logan is really good. What'd you think?
I liked Logan. I didn't quite have it on my list, but it's a very dark spin on the whole.
Right.
And in a way, they almost could have put a bow on these X-Men movies.
Yeah, I think.
There's another one coming out.
Yeah.
That certainly puts a bow on the Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman of X-Men.
Right, yeah.
Because now they're going to reboot the thing anyway.
And then you got Deadpool, and Deadpool 2 is coming out, and I guess Disney has Deadpool now.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. So
there's a couple X-Men movies that were already in the can, like Deadpool.
They were in
and there's another X-Men movie, and there's a new Mutants movie.
Oh yeah.
And now Disney's going to probably just like release those and then pretend they didn't happen.
But then it's going to be like Deadpool and the X-Men meet the Avengers. You're going to get all that shit. You're probably going to have to be a new cast at some point. You know, you're going to have a new Wolverine.
There'll be an X-Men reboot or something.
Not that we didn't already have the young X-Men, but...
Yeah, well, we're doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of X-Men fatigue. That may be why I didn't think of it. But Patrick Stewart is goddamn brilliant in this movie.
Yeah.
as a kind of doddering, failing Professor X. And you know, Hugh Jackman is good. Solid.
It's a road movie. It's more of an action movie than a... Well, it's an action movie with drama in between, and it's very well done. You know, it's almost like a father and his son on the road being pursued. You know, that's kind of what this is.
It's kind of like Road to Perdition-y sort of feel to it.
Good stuff. That was Logan at 7. Corey, give us a 7.
My number 7 is... number one in the hearts of black bloggers, but
I know what that is. That was no, that was not okay. I mean, if I could have come up with a funny movie, that would have been
on
great.
Certain corners of the internet.
Pitch Perfect 3. See, there you go.
Yeah, I learned.
See, that would have been a good line. I can edit out.
I learned a new phrase recently online. Well, hoteps.
What is a hotep?
Hoteps are people that are they're distinctly focused on Afrocentrism and Africanism.
Oh.
But maybe...
I'm a hotep, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm on 9:10 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every Tuesday night at 11
p.m. But they're
PM.
Like real... These guys are like super... They're super over it. They're super into it. Dashiki. Anyway.
Oh.
But this movie was Get Out.
Get Out.
By Jordan Peele. And I thought it was a really effective horror comedy satire. Maybe I put it too high on my list based on just the messianic qualities that were attributed to this movie on some degree. But I think it's pretty effective and pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, this might be... Okay, I liked Get Out on a strict, you know, pass, fail, was Get Out good? I would say yes, but maybe the most overrated movie of the year, in my opinion. And it's not on my top 15, but again, I'm not saying, like, it's not good or you could...
I forgot Skull Island, damn it!
Well, then you should have had that and not this fucking Get Out.
These lists are not perfect.
No, they're not perfect. And Get Out's not perfect. But again, we're watching Black Panther, and we're seeing how that's tracking, and we're seeing the whole world talk about it, and especially African Americans talking about it like it's the greatest movie ever made. It is historically important. Get Out had a lot of that going for it about this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, Trump had just become the president, and people were looking at this about, you know, black and white relations, and, you know, the president's a Klansman, and this was the answer to everyone's prayer. To me... You know, this is a black version of Shaun of the Dead on some levels. I think Shaun of the Dead's a better movie than this.
You're right.
Get Out's good. I'm not putting it down.
You're right that the timing of it made it seem more prophetic of the moment.
Absolutely.
But I think it's really more about white liberals and their...
Okay.
Because look at like Brad Whitford.
Okay.
Is all like, oh, I would have voted for Obama 3 times.
Yeah.
It's really kind of about this whole community of well-meaning, and Allison Williams is the girlfriend.
They're all good in it, yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like...
Catherine Keener's really good in this. Stephen Root is in this.
But it's a satire. It's a dark satire, literally, about the African-American experience in this country.
Yeah.
And how to, even on a normal, good day, being black in America can feel like a horror show.
Yeah.
That's... kind of, and I know, and you know what? That's okay. You write it out on paper like that, it seems kind of cheesy, but the way they present it in the movie, it really was effective. And it really, it did what I love when horror movies have an idea behind them. Because a lot of horror movies are just, what can we do to scare you?
Sure.
The Purge movies have a better idea than the execution of them.
Yeah.
There's like an interesting idea behind that. Mm. Just the movies themselves tend to suck. But this one I thought was really a really, you know what I mean? Like something like
it's
the Howling had ideas behind it.
The real world, there's something scary between. So there's something scary about everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can explain this high white society by saying, well, they're all zombies or they're all.
You make an exaggeration of it. You say,
I mean, well, they live. It would be an example of kind of working in the same way.
Yeah, and I love that.
They're all aliens. You know, all of those people that
you distrust.
The rich people
are some evil creatures from
another world. You know, I get it. Look, Get Out to me is overrated. It's not on my list. I didn't hate it. But again, I saw it after it was a thing. I saw it after all the hype was there. And yeah, to me, it doesn't live up to the hype. But really, what can... I also feel like Get Out is the greatest movie you've ever seen if you've seen like three movies in your life. If you're 22 years old,
it does suffer from that,
and I only have it at number seven.
And like, but, you know,
that could have been what to us at our age might have been like Pulp Fiction or something. That was the greatest movie we had ever seen in a way. I mean, I won't speak for you, but you know what I mean. Of a generation, you get that movie that sort of kicks the old stuff in the ass.
The older you get, the more you remember, and the more enthusiasm from younger people who suddenly see something and go, this reinvented
is
annoying to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you saw Reservoir Dogs, the older people say, well, that's just The Killing, and that's, you know, which it was, you know, on some level.
So, Get Out, it's one of the only horror movies I can remember that was nominated for awards.
Nominating it for Best Picture to me, and the kid for acting, what's his name here? It's, Daniel Kaluuya,
who's also in Black Panther.
Okay. I mean, I don't know, man. If you want to give it a screenplay and say it's clever, I'm good with it. But again, look, I don't give a shit what the Oscars are anyway. I see all the Oscar movies out of an obligation and to make this show and to be part of the discussion. You could give it to any piece of garbage. I don't care. But yeah, I mean, it is a good idea. Jordan Peele, Key and Peele are guys who I kind of respect more than enjoy. I think watching their show, I saw the movie, what was Keanu, which was hard to get through for me. Sometimes I feel like even this movie could have been a really good 12-minute sketch.
Yes.
But okay, Get Out. Yeah. It's out there. Go get it. Go get that.
All right.
Have another bong hit and watch Get Out, kids. That's what I say to you.
What's your number six?
Well, number six is, you know, when we're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and where we're talking about, you know, the way that all of these superheroes are eventually going to collide. And we're talking about, action movies, and we're talking about big budgets and digital effects. And, certainly something that if you didn't see it in 3D IMAX, I think you missed out on. And maybe you'll have a chance to catch that. Get your surround sound system, crank it up to 10, and put on a movie called Columbus. All right, that was all bullshit. All right, Columbus I actually talked about, I think, last week or a couple shows ago. It is an indie movie. It is the indiest of indie movies. It is also, as I talk about Lady Bird, a coming-of-age movie. It is about a girl that is just out of high school who wants to move to the East Coast to go to college. She lives in Columbus, Indiana, which is a town known for its architecture, mid-century modern architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these buildings were built there. And she lives in this town and studies the architecture, but is very bored there. And wishes she was somewhere else. And very angsty. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of a kind of a Gen X vibe to it. You know, kind of a 90s, like, we got to get out of this small town, man, kind of thing.
Reality bites.
John Cho plays a kind of a rich guy. He comes to town because his dad is one of these, I don't know if he was an architect or a lecturer. The movie's a little ambiguous about what the dad actually did. But the dad gets ill. John Cho has to come to town. Those two end up meeting, having what you would describe as a romance, although it's very unconventional. Most of it involving, you know, walking around talking about architecture. That may seem very boring to you. And if it is, you probably won't like this movie. But I think this movie, stylistically, was one of the best movies of the year. I mean, I know that this Kona Gaga, we talked about this guy last time on the show, and that he was a film critic who had, you know, analyzed all of these great movies from, you know, French New Wave and Italian cinema to Wes Anderson. And he made this debut movie that is impeccably shot. I thought the acting was great. Haley Lou Richardson, I'm a big fan of now after this movie because I thought she was really wonderful. And I just dug the whole thing. I thought it was great. I mean, again, as I said earlier, style meant a lot for me this year. And to me, this was as stylish as any movie out there. So I really like Columbus. I know you saw it and you thought what? Corey fell asleep during it, but that's...
It is well shot.
Yes.
It is well made.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't, to me, stand out from a lot of indie movies that I've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It also had Parker Posey in it, which is the clearest indication that you're in an indie movie.
Well, Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, I know. Those two are, you know, those are, but it is good. It's a good movie.
Yes.
It is a very sleepy little indie movie.
It is.
Confessionally, I got to say that I found a lot of those buildings to be ugly.
Well, I mean, it's
the modern.
If you're not a fan of mid-century modern architecture,
she's obsessed with this modernist architecture. Yeah. The one thing I did like the church they were in. Mm-hmm. That was a cool looking building. But a lot of these are kind of square, minimalist cubes. And they stare at these buildings.
Yeah.
And she and John Cho.
And they talk about life.
She and John Cho are both have strained relationships of being caregivers to their parents.
To their parents, yeah. You see, again, a lot like Lady Bird in a sense there.
And he very much did steal stylism. Most notably from Yasuhiro Ozu.
Okay, yes.
Ozu, who will do things. Ozu would do things like, one, he'll have the camera at a low angle because he said that he was looking at the world from a tatami mat, which is Japanese people sit on the floor on mats. But this movie will do things where they will give you an establishing shot of a hallway. Then they'll wait 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then John Cho will walk into the hallway.
Yeah.
And so it'll give you these little cutaways.
And there's great use of mirrors where you see the characters in a mirror reflected and then they walk into the scene. It's impeccably done.
There's one big pivotal emotional scene that takes place in a reflection in a mirror.
Yes.
Which I thought was a little bit cheeky.
Well.
But it's a good movie.
You could say that the style of the movie matches the architecture.
I think it was a little too cognizant of its own.
Okay.
He was being a little cute with some of it.
Yeah.
And it is a nice movie.
Yeah.
It will, I think you have to have sort of an appetite and a taste for indie movies to begin with. Speaking of movies you couldn't recommend to your cousin.
But this one, I'm breaking that rule a little bit on some level. But, mm-hmm. I thought one thing about this that was really, well, okay, first of all, 98% Rotten Tomatoes on this. I believe, and the reason I even found out about this is because I went through, in order to make this list, the top movies on Metacritic for the year, and I believe this was in the top 10 Metacritic. So, I mean, this thing did great. I mean, again, not much distribution for this. This was distributed by the Sundance Institute. $1 million box office. It ran for, although it was... Okay, well, I'm trying to read this. In Columbus, Indiana, Columbus sold a record-breaking 8,953 tickets over the course of a 6-week local run at the Yes Cinema. The previous record holder was The King's Speech with 3,700 tickets in a 9-week run. So somewhere there's an indie house in Columbus, Indiana, that really loved this movie, Columbus. But yeah, go see Columbus. Again, you gotta hunt this one down. I don't even know where you see it. I think it was on Hulu.
It's available online pretty
easily. Yeah, you can find it, but you can rent it. I really loved it. If you like visuals, if you like and visual storytelling, everything you find out.
It's on YouTube.
Is it on YouTube, the whole thing? Okay, I didn't even know that. But see Columbus. I liked it. I don't know. Call me an asshole.
It's a nice movie. I've seen a lot of indie movies kind of with a similar story.
Sure. Well, it's Lady Bird and this kind of have the same story. But I like...
Well...
Stylistically, this is better than Lady Bird. It is.
Yeah. It's beautifully shot. I will say that it's... Yes. The cinematography is very nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway. All right. That was my number six. You got to give us a number six now.
My number six... Speaking of a movie that's all flash and all sizzle, it's exactly...
All sizzle. The Joel Radio Podcast?
Yeah, it's 1,000% stylistically the opposite of this movie, Baby Driver.
Baby Driver, yes.
Yes.
Oh, how much sizzle can you put in there?
It's all sizzle, man.
It is. It's all sizzle. I mean, that's a movie that is, they made a music video. It ended up being 2 hours long, and we released it as a feature, Baby Driver.
I didn't have more fun at the movies than this all year.
I did.
Maybe Kong Skull Island, which I didn't put on my list. I can't believe I put Wind River on here instead of Kong Skull Island.
Yeah.
I hate my own list, Joel. But I thought Baby Driver was as much fun as you can have. It's a caper picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's... You know what this is like? This is like Drive, the Nicholas Winding Refn movie. It's like a remix of that, but from a more fun perspective.
Well,
Edgar Wright is, you're right. He makes He makes Poppy movies. This makes me wonder why Marvel kicked him off Ant-Man.
Yeah.
They should have just stuck with him.
I don't know.
He probably didn't want to play along with putting all the other Avengers.
Ant-Man did all right without him, and there's a new Ant-Man coming out. So.
But this was just pure fun the whole time. Maybe one of the last Kevin Spacey performances.
For a while, anyway, I would say.
John Hamm, Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
The whole thing just clicks and moves, and it's a visual storytelling feast. The car chases in this movie, I thought, where they pushed the boundary of believability without being over the top.
Well,
all of the stuff that happens in cars in this movie acts like it seems like it could happen.
It could, but could that kid have driven that car? Probably not. You know, that's where you have to suspend disbelief. And he's sort of
a superpower of driving.
Yeah, and the shooting and all that stuff. I saw Baby Driver. I reviewed it on the show. I saw that in 4DX in downtown LA at the Regal Cinemas on 4th of July. And I wanted to like this because I really liked his trilogy that he did with Simon Pegg and World's End and Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, which I talked about already on the show. And I kind of got annoyed with this. I thought it was too much. I thought it was too much sizzle, not enough steak. I got bored with it pretty quickly. I was annoyed. And I saw it in 4DX. My screen, my chair was shaking. Every bullet impact made a little thing in my seat pop out and hit me in the back. And as the cars were ripping down the road, wind was blowing on me. And when it rained, water was hitting me in the face, coming out of the seat in front of me. But you know what? I don't think sitting in I think that was the way to see this movie. I just think it was a little. Again, I don't think there was enough story there for me. I didn't like this kid at all. I forget the name of this actor. You can
Ansel Elgort.
That kid did nothing for me.
You didn't like him?
Well, I mean, you can't even see his eyes. He's wearing Wayfarers the whole fucking time. I mean, nothing captivated me in a way. And you know what? If I was 20-something years old, and like when Pulp Fiction came out, you know, I was 22 when that came out, I might have went like, oh, Baby Driver. The same way in Get Out, you know, same way with that. I might have been like, yeah, but I went like, Edgar Wright's awesome. I think the guy's great. I'll see anything he does. I just didn't like this that much. So that's my review of
Baby
Driver.
You just don't enjoy a good time in the movies.
Well, I've given you all. I just talked about Logan
I'll tell you what. I'll say that the
Planet of the Apes.
I will say that Lily James is the actress who plays Deborah.
Yeah.
Who is Baby's girlfriend here in this. And she's also the secretary in Darkest Hour.
Oh, okay.
And you might not put those two together.
I did not put that. And I saw both of those, and I didn't put those together.
And she's a gorgeous young actress.
She is.
But she's
no Haley Lou Richardson, but she's all right.
Hey, she's in two very different movies. and I just thought everything about Baby Driver clicked and world.
It's
a big, it's a big pinball machine of a movie.
Yeah.
It is a big colorful.
And he cut the action to the songs. He picked the songs in advance.
He did a great soundtrack.
And I normally would like all that. I like all the elements. I didn't, I liked all the ingredients, but I didn't like the meal. You know,
it is a movie about other movies, kind of.
Yeah,
it's sort of an homage to caper movies and all kinds of things. But I thought you need a little bit of this sprinkles on your donut, and that's what Baby Driver is.
Okay. Baby Driver from Corey at number six. Number five, for me, we're going back to the documentaries. I've had a couple on here already, but this was my favorite documentary of the year. Every time the Oscars, they release something called the shortlist. That is the movies before the Oscar nominations. There's a shortlist of Oscar-nominated movies, which I think was something like 10 movies or 14 movies, 15 movies. And they release those, so I rush out to see those. And then the actual Oscar-nominated documentaries come out. And then usually the ones that I saw on the shortlist don't even make the real list, which is what happened this year. So this one was shortlisted, but not actually Oscar nominated, but it was the best one of the year, in my opinion. I talked about it on this show a couple months ago. But L.A. 92, which is the story of the L.A. riots, largely done through news footage and text. No talking heads, nobody looking into the camera, recounting what happened on that day. It's all footage of what happened and radio broadcasts and the 92 L.A. riots, which, I lived through. Not that I was in L.A., but, I was an adult when these things happened. To me, and seeing them in the context of this documentary, probably the scariest time in the history of America. at least for that weekend in that region, because this was essentially, as much as I'm saying, like, 9-11, yeah, this to me is even more scary than 9-11 in the sense that you had a race war, a literal war based upon the color of your skin that determined what side you were on. It only lasted a weekend, and it was only in a few blocks in Los Angeles, but when you see the footage of what happened, it is absolutely terrifying. It is unbelievable, some of the shit that went down. The gang members, the Koreans arming themselves to fight the gang members and the looters, the cops who, you know, and believe me, the cops do not, you know, the cops are completely, you know, it all starts with the Rodney King beating. The cops there completely got a, you know, they walked in a way that they really shouldn't have walked. The trial is covered extensively, which was what preceded the riots. It's unbelievable what happened. It's unbelievable to think that this could happen again, but maybe it could. I don't know. I mean, for all of the Ferguson and all of the Black Lives Matter and all of that stuff, really that all paled compared to this. And even, you know, the Watts riots and the Detroit riots and all those things, really not the level of violence and destruction that happened in 92. Nowhere near that. This was an unbelievable thing that happened. And this movie is, you can't, I lived through it. I knew everything in the movie that happened, but still watching it unfold, I couldn't believe. It was something else. So did you watch it?
Yeah.
I
just wasn't inclined to think of documentaries in this.
Yeah,
and maybe not.
Some people don't. I do.
Maybe not in
I
a
go,
theatrical.
This is a movie. Yeah.
Maybe not in a theatrical sense.
Yeah, I didn't see this in the theater, so I saw this on television. But my goodness, LA 92, holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's all I can say. See this. I mean, again, you know, you're gonna sit down with your girl on a Friday night, watch this, and drink some wine? Probably not. It's fucking intense. But I loved it, man. I thought this thing was... Because, you know, like the OJ thing, this was as good as that. This was as good as that OJ thing. And there's LA riot stuff in the OJ thing. That's part of the story, in a way, you know. The background of the cops and blacks in Los Angeles. But an unbelievable document of that event. So that's LA 92. All right, give us a number five, Corey.
My number five is the Florida Project.
Florida Project.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another fun-filled thrill ride.
Through. Let me make a double date out of LA 92 and the Florida Project.
Well,
throw a little Columbus in there.
This is another movie about the deprivation of economic desolation.
Mm-hmm.
This is about what happens to people on the fringes, what happens to people ignored and left out.
Yeah.
I'm being no fun Jones in this situation, but
yeah,
it's a beautiful movie. It's a great movie.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
The director previously made a film called Tangerine,
yeah,
which he shot on his iPhone, that was about transgender prostitutes
mm-hmm.
in L.A.
Yeah, Sean Baker.
Yeah, so he made this for about $3.
Yeah.
And it's set in a kind of a weekly rental hotel, daily hourly rental.
Yeah.
Rundown hotel.
Yeah, I think it's 60 bucks a night or 40 bucks a night,
something like that. 35.
Because I looked it up, and this hotel is a real hotel, and you can actually get a room, and if you go on, mm-hmm. you know, Google Maps, and it'll say, do you want to rent a room there for $40 a night?
Yeah.
It's. Well, the thing about Florida Project, and by the way, my number one movie of the year.
Oh,
so there
right.
you go. You've hit my number one here.
There you go.
Is that it all... I mean, okay. So, William Dafoe is the only actor that you'll recognize in this movie.
Yes.
Because I think the rest of them weren't even really actors, you know?
No.
And he's Oscar nominated and deservedly so. He's great in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He is the conscience of this movie. He is acting as the spectator, as these women and children and people live in this hotel. I mean, part of this movie, and I know I read an interview with Sean Baker saying, you know, he was inspired by The Little Rascals. You know, he wanted to show poor children and what they're up to. You know, a modern version of that. Part of this felt like, you know, Italian cinema. Part of it felt like the Bicycle Thief, I thought of when I saw this.
Yeah,
I thought of a lot of French New Wave, the 400 Blows and that kind of stuff. Jules and
Jim. 400 Blows is pretty good.
Yeah, because that was about a kid
comparison.
Running around.
It's a realist.
Yeah. The realism of it. And really.
But also, they're in Orlando and they're surrounded by unreality.
Right.
So there's all these kind of tourist trappy.
Right.
There's a big orange building that's shaped like an orange.
Yeah.
There's one with a big wizard on it.
Yeah.
They're They're a couple hundred yards from Disney.
Yeah, and they're selling, you know, knockoff perfume at the outlet mall and stuff like that. It's powerful. I cried at the end of this movie. I'm not going to lie to you. Mm-hmm. This is the only movie that made me cry all year. And it was sad. The little girl in here,
Brooklyn
Brooklyn Prince is on. How do you? I mean, look.
Well,
you can sit here and go, you shouldn't nominate kids for Oscars because they're fucking kids. They don't know what they're doing. But is there any more character that sticks with you all year than Brooklyn Prince in this movie? I don't think so.
She's amazing.
It's amazing.
I am hesitant to. I always resist child acting.
Yeah, I agree.
And then I think like people are a little too because. You can get a great performance. Remember the girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, you can get a great performance out of a 5-year-old if you just put a camera
That's
over
true,
here.
Yeah.
And you go, hey, kids are willing to do what you ask them to do.
And you could make the argument that these kids aren't even acting.
They're just
hanging around and he's shooting it. And I believe that's a lot of what he did
here. There is one montage where her mother is servicing guys in the hotel room, and she gives the
spoiler.
I know, but she gives the little girl a bath every time.
Yeah,
and you know that they just shot her in the bathtub for like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and like or
and they added
hour.
Some dial sound.
But the way they cut this is like every time it's a different thing. And the kid is just the kids are organic and real, and you can't really spoil this movie. It doesn't really have
but it
doesn't have a conventional plot.
It doesn't. A lot of it you're just watching. It's just. I mean, some of it feels like a documentary almost.
And if it was not for the presence of Willem Dafoe, you would kind of feel it was a documentary.
Yeah, you may not know that this is...
But Dafoe is amazing.
Yeah, he is. He's wonderful.
He's terrific. The guy who played his son I've seen before.
Okay.
But he's this guy who's managing the hotel, and he's not a saint, but he kind of looks out for all the...
Right. He's on one hand, he's got to look the other way to what's going on the other hand, he's got to make sure,
And I think he's upset and frustrated with this mother and her little child. But
Bria Venati is the actress who was like an Instagram model.
Yeah.
And who I thought was great in this
too. She does a great performance.
Yeah, she was completely believable.
So this thing is as powerful a movie as you'll see. You're right. It was affecting. It did make me cry, and it was emotional.
Yeah. The end of this movie is the greatest.
Yeah.
The end of this movie is the greatest.
It's pretty amazing.
End of Disaster Artist is great too, but this is better. It's great.
The Florida Project is one you have to see.
Yeah, and I've recommended this to people, and everyone that's seen it has said, "Yeah, that was really good."
Yeah.
Again.
It's not an
is
easy.
Is it for everybody? No.
It's not an easy watch.
But it's
not.
It'll stick with you. This, if I had to watch one movie again of all the movies we're going to talk about today, I would watch this one again. If I was going to sit with my girlfriend and go,
you
never saw this, and we'll see this.
I don't know because that this is maybe a tough watch.
Yeah,
I'd rather watch Baby Driver, Kong Skull Island again.
Yeah.
But this is an amazing movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. The Florida Pride. It's my number one movie, so what can I tell you?
I ganked your number one.
You ganked it, bruh. All right, well, then I'm going to give you my... Well, you know what? You suck.
Well, there's one I know you don't
have. My number four was Wind River, so that's my number four, and that's where we're up to. So why don't you give us your number four, and then we'll be up to speed.
Here's where the fight begins.
All right, here we go.
My number four.
I'm writing it down all
You know what it is.
We did.
Had this fight.
We've had two shows where we fought over this movie.
Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah.
Which is probably likely to win the Oscar.
Well, it's, I was going to say, no, I think this might, but we're going to talk about that one in a minute anyway. But yeah, go ahead. Talk about three billboards.
All right. It's in the inside track on the Oscar.
But
there's another one that might win.
Yeah.
Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Martin McDonagh, who did In Bruges. Just a weird, dark comedy. I think what frustrates people somewhat is that I think it's more allegorical than people are letting it on to be.
Oh, three bill. Yeah.
And that they're going, well, how can these people behave like this? They're crazy. Well, I think they're more archetypes than they are real people to some extent.
Okay.
Sam Rockwell is great. Ned Francis McDormand. They both won Golden Globes.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've talked about this movie before. I thought it was startling and outstanding and stuck out. I didn't like even everything in it.
Yeah.
Even I was frustrated.
Woody Harrelson's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woody's great. Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's funny because this is a movie. As much as I talk about Florida Project, I tell people to see it and they say they like it. People are coming to me saying, I saw Three Billboards didn't like it. And yeah. I've heard that from more than a few people. Okay. And we've had this argument between us. But there was an article in the new Entertainment Weekly about this. And there's a backlash because people are feeling like race relations, that some of the moral things, that's without ruining everybody, the characters... There are characters that are redeemed that are unredeemable in a sense.
Well,
and it's hard to root for some of these people. And that's one of the problems that I had with it is I can't really root for Frances McDormand. I can't really root mm-hmm. for Sam Rockwell in this. I kind of thought that the movie logically didn't seem like these characters would behave in the way that they were behaving. So logic. Now, and again, it's not based on a true story. There was some woman, I guess, somewhere that put up billboards, but that's the only part of reality that's yes. in this. It's not really based on a true story. But I also went like, well, you know, I mean, movies are about stories. And if you love the story and if it's a great story, you'll like the movie. And that's why, you know, I liked, you know, Get Me Roger Stone or The Big Sick. You know, they were great stories. To me, I just kind of went like, I don't like these people. I don't like what they're doing. It was way too violent for me. I thought at a point that, I don't know. I mean, again, can you say that this movie's great and the ending stinks or the last third? Because I remember enjoying it. Like, literally, the act of watching this was enjoyment to a point and then going, all right, let's wrap this up. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're doing that? Why the fuck are they doing that? This doesn't make sense that they're doing this. I don't like that they're doing this. Get me out of this theater. Get me home. And that's kind of where I come down.
I was gripped the whole way. I thought it was pretty fascinating. And
Martin McDonagh, you got my money. Anytime you want it, I'll go see your next movie. Mm. I like it. I love it. Bruges was great.
It's a challenging
Seven
movie.
Psychopaths was good. This I didn't like. Frances McDormand is great. All the acting's great. There's not, but yeah, boy. You know, sometimes it comes down to...
I think some of that backlash, by the way, is the whole, well, you can't. He's a racist, so he can't be redeemed.
Well,
I
yeah.
think that's part of the problem with this country.
Yeah?
Is that here's a guy who is racist, and yeah. avowedly so, and then he starts to see maybe that wasn't the best course of action for his life. And when people go, well, you can't forgive them.
Yeah.
You're unforgivable. Well, that's what we do in this country. We balkanize. We go into our little corners. We say, you're this, I'm that, and fuck you.
Well,
and
yeah.
you know what?
yeah.
That's what this movie's kind of about.
Yeah.
This movie's kind of about that.
It is. About, and I mean...
This is like an articulation of insensible rage.
The moral is violence begets more violence, and I get that, but just in a two-hour format like this, I can't recommend it. You know, when you talk about what's a good night at the movies, to me... This isn't a good night at the movies. LA 92 is not a good night at the movies either. I get that. I'm being a hypocrite on some level. I get that I'm a hypocrite. I'm sorry.
Holy. People are going to fall asleep there in Columbus. And you're recommending it? It's literally a movie where a girl and a dude stare at modernist
Please.
Office
Yes.
Kids.
Yes. They watch a lady vacuum. They watch a lady
they
vacuum.
They really do.
They do.
For like 5 minutes.
I love it. And I loved it. I loved watching that lady vacuum.
It was a bridge too far for me.
I
Go watch An Autumn Afternoon or Floating Weeds if you want to watch another.
I really enjoyed Columbus. I didn't enjoy watch Three Billboards.
Jean Dimonquois, Avenue 1-2-3 Bressel.
There is some, I think, a little bit of backlash in saying that an English Irishman, which is what Martin McDonagh is, shouldn't be making a movie about race relations in the United States. I disagree with that on principle.
Yeah.
I think you can still hate the movie and dislike the movie.
Let me pull up an article about how white people can't go to Black Panther.
Well, that
because people will write dumb articles.
Is somebody saying that?
Yeah.
I don't know nothing. You and I, for the record, as of this record, have not seen Black Panther.
We'll talk about Black Panther.
When we see it, yeah.
We have not seen it. All right, when we recorded this, yes.
Well, I'm waiting for my dashiki to arrive from Amazon.com.
Nah.
And then I'm going to go. I could go down to Livernois. You want to go down to Livernois?
Wait, hold on.
Get some dashikis after.
Don't you have your jacket from Kwanzaa?
Oh, yeah. You know what? That's in another room, but you're right. I do have
hold on.
Kwanzaa. I have my do-rag and
if
my
If you're not
African
a longtime listener of the program, in the old days, we did a live show called Kwanzaa.
The Corey and Joel Radio Show presents.
And we booked our favorite African-American and Jewish comedians.
We did.
And we had a festival of, what was called a Festival of Lights and Blacks.
A Festival of Lights and Blacks,
And we had a show, and Joel and I went to the now closed Northland Mall.
Yeah.
Looking for, we went a bunch of places.
Well, I went looking for a dashiki and couldn't find one.
Yeah.
But I found this jacket that had all of the, a map of Africa and all kind of different prints. It looked like some FUBU knockoff.
I dressed like a Hasidic Jew.
Yes. And so anyway, perfectly wearing the garb.
Yeah.
Which offended no one. Then I had Mike Lundy wanting to punch me in the nose over my look.
We really were stupid.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was, you've got that jacket. So
I have that jacket. I could wear that to Black Panther.
We put all our friends on the show.
Yeah, it was fine. Keith Ruff was on that show. It was a good show.
Nate Fritzen.
And by the way, if you want to find that show, go over to joelradio.net and search the archives for Kwanzaa. I have no idea what year that was, but the poster was funny, too. I remember making the poster for that. It was a good time. All right, let's go on to my next movie, which I'm up to number three now, because your three was I, Tonya.
Yeah.
So I'm giving you my three. I know this is on both of our lists, so let's just get into it. The Shape of Water is my number three movie.
And that's my number one.
All
so
right,
bing, bing,
there
bing.
You go. Good night.
List.
Yeah. Shape of Water is fantastic. You know, if you want to tell any person alive with a pulse, this is a good movie and you'll enjoy it. I want to say of all of the movies on this list, I don't think you can go wrong with The Shape of Water.
Right.
I don't care if you go, oh, I don't like Guillermo del Toro. You'll still like it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't like fantasy. I don't like science fiction. You'll still like it. I don't want a Cold War thriller. You'll still like it. You'll like this. It's just really, 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 really good. It's Beauty and the Beast for grown-ups. It's a woman falling in love with a fish man. But you know what? It's really, really, really great.
Yeah.
It's well done. It's beautiful. I mean, everything we've talked about today on this show, the style, the story, the acting, it all comes together. It's one of the best movies of the year, without question.
This is a movie for people who love movies.
Yeah.
It is essentially a reversal of Creature from the Black Lagoon. It's that movie from the creature's perspective, basically. And it is a romance about... not to give too much away, but you know, I think we can.
Well, I mean, it's.
Trailers.
I mean, the woman falls in love with this fish guy. She's the cleaning lady.
Mysterious fish creature that the government's studying, and she and Octavia Spencer work. Sally Hawkins as Eliza.
Who's awesome?
Esposito.
Great, great.
Yeah, she's a mute.
Yeah.
In this movie, and I normally hate that kind of gimmick.
Yeah, I know.
And she makes it beautifully.
Yeah.
She plays it beautifully. And Richard Jenkins is in this as her like landlord and friend. And everything in this movie is thought through.
Yeah,
the color scheme in this movie tells a story.
Emerald green
is
kind
of
the thing.
We get this like proficient. We get a stream of greens.
Yeah,
and they all drag us into his world of the underwater. They all sort of drag us underneath. There's little clues and single her, you know, on her her little things there.
Yeah, she has some scars on her neck.
I don't want to give it all away, but. There are all these little clues and symbology embedded in it, and the way that they use color.
Yeah.
Certain colors
are
only used in moments of drama, and they're kind of absent from the movie. And he likes this key lime pie, but it doesn't just look like key lime pie. It looks like this really lurid jello green.
Radioactive green. And the movie takes place in the Cold War, and there's those
50s teal cars in it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it takes you from this kind of drab, rainy, dark world into this rich, vibrant undersea kingdom. There's a moment in this movie that I thought the audience was going to lose it. There's like where even in the middle of a movie about a fish man and a deaf girl falling or a mute girl falling in love. There's a moment where I went, oh, they're gonna lose it now. This is too silly.
Yeah.
And it goes to some crazy place.
Yeah. There's like a dream sequence.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I know. I know the one.
It's a dream sequence.
I know the one you're talking about, yeah.
And the audience loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
They ate it up.
It was great.
I saw it with a packed theater, and everybody from all ages and groups love this movie because it's a fairy tale. It's a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
And it's from Guillermo del Toro, grew up watching monster movies and loved them.
Yeah.
And this is like a tribute to those.
Yeah.
Because all monster movies really are kind of about the monster is this alienated, lonely figure. And this is like a tribute to that.
Well, it's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah,
it's King Kong in reverse. Instead of Kong falling in love with the woman falls in love with King Kong. I mean, you can say that too. It's very well done. There is some criticism. I found some articles about Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who's made some really good movies, Delicatessen, City of Lost Children.
Mm-hmm.
He's accusing Guillermo del Toro of ripping off the scene where they're dancing on the couch together. There's another, a playwright is saying it is too familiar with something that they did. I don't know what they're talking about. To me, this movie this movie when does cobble bits and pieces of 50 years of cinema and distills it into a modern fantasy picture.
Doug Jones, who plays the creature who's never named.
Yeah.
Doug Jones is great.
Yeah, he is.
He's like the Andy Serkis of... costumed
he plays a guy in a suit.
He wears guys in makeup more. Andy Serkis plays computer capture.
Well, he's a contortionist or something.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He's like an acrobat contortion kind of guy. But he gives a brilliant performance in this.
Richard Jenkins.
Loved it.
Great.
My favorite movie of the year.
Richard Jenkins, great. Michael Shannon being Michael Shannon.
Oh, Michael Shannon. Is the villain.
But he's absolutely just playing Michael Shannon.
He's amazing.
At this point.
Michael Stuhlbarg is in it too.
Yeah, Michael Stuhlbarg.
Who's a great actor? Was in A Serious Man and in the third season of Fargo.
He's in Call Me by Your Name.
Yeah.
Which could still be on one of our lists, Corey.
Sure.
Stay tuned.
But yeah, my favorite movie of the year. It worked.
it's on my list, but not this list. If that anyway. So yeah, Shape of Water. It's great. You know, this is a movie. Look, I took a girl to this. I took Layla to this. She did not think she would like it, and she liked it. So there you go. She thought Shape of Water was great.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Go see it.
There you go.
Still in theaters. Could win Best Picture. It's either between that and Three Billboards. We're going to get to the Oscar noms in a minute. But all right, my number two movie. Because I gave you three. Well, I guess you're going to give me... where are we at here? I think... you know what, Corey?
I got to give you number two.
We must both have the same number two, or you didn't list the movie in your top 15 that I think you should have listed.
You know, I think I misspoke earlier.
Did you... Dude. All right, I'm going to give you my number two.
I know what your number two is.
My number two is Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Is that your number two?
No.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, let's talk about Dunkirk, and then we'll let Corey give out his number
two. No, because I think I said three, but it's only two.
Well, because you have Shape of Water as Tanya was your three.
Yeah.
And Shape of Water is your one, so we're waiting on your two. Florida Project was my one. Anyway, let's talk about Dunkirk, Christopher Nolan. I mean, you've heard a lot about Dunkirk. I mean, one of the things that this movie does that a lot of movies don't do is there's really not a lead actor. You know, it really is an ensemble, and it's many, you know, you have, what is it, Air, Sea, and Land? That's how this broke down into thirds. We did a whole Dunkirk review from when we went out and saw it. We saw it in 70mm film, Corey, if you remember.
We did.
We drove across town.
There was a lot of
hype about how to see it.
About how to see it and what the format was.
Right, and my friend in L.A. saw it in... whatever, 70mm IMAX, which wasn't even available to us in Detroit.
When did this movie come out? June?
September? Yeah, let me look it up here. It was...
was it a summer movie?
Yeah, it was. Might have been
I think that was a problem with it.
Oh, in that it came out July 21st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the reason I didn't have it on my list...
Why is that?
...is that it fell out of my memory in a way.
It's Oscar nominated all this.
I know it's Oscar nominated, but when I went back to think about it, it's really about craft and stuff.
It is craft. And again, this year for me, big on craft. Shape of Water, craft. Florida Project, craft.
It is a movie I...
Columbus, craft. Dunkirk, craft.
Dunkirk is a movie I admired without liking.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well, Christopher Nolan can be accused of being cold on some level. And artsy, and you know, the human beings kind of being props. Same thing people said about Kubrick, you know,
if I'm keeping it 100, there's movies on my list that aren't as good as Dunkirk from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
But they were more enjoyable and engaging as movies.
You have the two other Dunkirk movies on your list.
I know. Get Out and Baby Driver are not as good as this movie.
Okay.
In a way.
Well,
except that those stories affected me and stuck with me in a way that the story of Dunkirk is trying to tell. It's trying to tell a story of an event from a distance.
Yeah.
And I think the distance is too far.
Well,
I think the camera gets pulled back too far.
You would have preferred a more of a focus on, say, the Mark Rylance character or the Tom Hardy character.
But that was the whole point of the exercise from Nolan was to make this movie where you see soldiers and you see civilians and you see the officers.
There's no Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan in this. There's not that one guy that you follow and
even,
you relate to.
Not
yeah.
even, what's his name? Kenneth Branagh is like the
Admiral. Right, yeah.
We don't get enough of him, really.
Well, you don't get enough of,
anybody.
That's how it works.
I know.
But again, I think this is a movie you can recommend to anybody. You can say, go see Dunkirk. You will like it, and people will like it. So, to me...
It is indisputably brilliantly made.
Yeah.
But for my personal taste, I felt it was a little too...
I mean...
Look, they take... Okay, Tom Hardy is the star of this movie.
Yeah.
Okay? And he's supposed to be the stand-in for the heroism of the pilots.
Yeah.
And the guy's got a mask on the whole time.
Okay.
And you can barely hear his dialogue.
Well,
he's
that's...
sitting in a cockpit. And it could be the
he's
same.
Good at wearing a mask and mumbling.
I know.
We saw from
and
The Dark Knight Rises.
Actually, every time they cut to him, it reminded me of like a Filmation cartoon from the 70s where like they animated Tarzan swinging twice.
Do you think
and
they
you just always saw Tarzan swinging from the
do
same
you think people? They just dubbed his dialogue in later or something?
No, they shot every second of him in that
I don't
cockpit,
know.
But the scenes were kind of indistinguishable.
Okay, you can't recommend people see Darkest Hour and skip Dunkirk, can you?
Kind of.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, Dunkirk's great. And
honestly, yeah, maybe
Christopher Nolan is a genius.
Maybe maybe something on the bottom of my list.
And like Interstellar,
this.
I didn't love, even though I thought it was all right. You know, this is better than that. The story of Dunkirk is a great story. And we hear that in, you know, I didn't see their finest, but Dark Star Wars covers that. This movie covers it well. It's really
I'll tell you what, if you wanted to watch all three of those movies, you would definitely get the whole perspective of it.
Oh, that's
because their finest is about the mythology of Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Like how important it was to the public as they make they're making this propaganda movie about it to sell the public on it. And Darkest Hour is about the operational behind the scenes.
Okay.
And then the Dunkirk is about the actual reality of it as it happened. It's a monumental great piece of filmmaking, and I should have probably had it on my list, but
I
didn't.
Well, all right, well, we're one movie left, and our top 15s are done. So give us.
And I didn't have Kong Skull Island either. Damn it!
Well, you done fucked up. All right, give us number two on your list. Between I, Tonya and Shape of Water comes
Phantom Thread.
Phantom Thread, you asshole! I mean, Phantom, I actually like Phantom Thread, but it's funny. I think we kind of feel the same way about this.
Yeah.
I just don't have it as number two. I don't have it on my top 15.
And you know what?
Yeah.
You're justified in that opinion.
Yeah.
I think that we're kind of Dunkirk and Phantom Thread are two very cerebral, intellectual pieces of high quality filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
This one just stuck with me a little bit more. Daniel Day-Lewis, who's now retiring from movies, gives this exhausting performance as the ridiculously named Reynolds Woodcock, who is a high fashion couturier designer in England in the 50s. He is the clothes maker for the elites. He dresses the finest women in these elaborate ornate gowns, including like royalty, like the Belgian princess. He makes her wedding dress. And he is kind of in a world surrounded by women. He's got his sister who runs his business operation. And he's got all these seamstresses that work for him. And there's no men around. And then he goes through a string of girlfriends until he meets this girl who's a waitress played by an actress named Vicky Kripes.
Yes.
Who's from Luxembourg.
Yes.
I could not figure out her accent, but I figured out she was from Luxembourg.
The movie is just, she's ambiguously European.
Yes.
And it doesn't even,
which
they
is
don't
Luxembourg.
Try to explain.
Yeah, I've never met anybody from Luxembourg. Anyway.
Well, Luxembourg is a little French, a little German, and a little Dutch, I would think.
And that's why that's why I couldn't figure out her accent. Yeah. Anyway, he brings her into the home, and she sort of slowly starts to assert herself.
She becomes his muse.
Yes, because he picks her because he likes her body shape and wants to dress her and blah, blah, blah. But she kind of insists gradually that she be seen for who she is. And be part of the operation, and it causes chaos for him because he's so meticulous and controls everything, and he resists her efforts to kind of be on a level playing field with him and have a relationship. And it gets weirder from there because it's a dark, like I was talking about, dark, twisted relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of come up
and
a lot.
When you were bringing that up earlier, I said, yeah, I know we're going to talk about one of these.
Yeah,
and it ends up going
in kind of a weird direction.
Yeah.
A little bit of supernatural element to it.
A little, I mean, it's funny, in like the first 20 minutes of this, I went like, this is like a really good setup for a Hitchcock movie.
It never really became
a Hitchcock movie, but there is one thing about this movie, and one of the reasons that I don't recommend you see it, even though I like it in a strict thumbs up, thumbs down, is that you got to get, you know, this movie has a twist. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not the fucking, you know, it's not I See Dead People. It's not a twist exactly like that, but there is a twist and there is something that
there's
you are,
suspense.
You are rewarded for sticking through this. Although, you know, the movie, if you're looking at it going, this Daniel Day-Lewis Woodcock guy is a fucking asshole. He treats these women like shit. This movie's annoying. I'm bored. That's all by design.
Yes.
It's all by, you're supposed to hate this guy. Much as like I didn't like the characters in Three Billboards, you're kind of supposed to like them, and I didn't, and that's why I didn't like it. You're not supposed to like Woodcock, and you're supposed to hope that bad things happen to Woodcock. And so that's how the movie was made to work, and it does work that way. But okay, here's the thing. So I'm at the theater watching this, okay? And a guy, I don't know, 5-6 rows in front of us, the credits hit the screen, and he goes like this. I'm going to describe it for people listening. He just goes like this. Like, he throws his hands in the air like, what the fuck? You know, he didn't say what the fuck, but it's kind of like, huh? Yeah. So when they reveal what the movie is sort of hiding, and then you see that, it may, depending on who you are, it may or may not have made that journey to that point worth it for you or not. I like the movie. I think it's really well done. I think Paul Thomas Anderson's a great director. Again, do I recommend it? No, and that's why it's not on my top 15, because I do think for a lot of people, you're going to sit through an hour and 48 minutes of just merciless, dire, and dirt to get to what was kind of a cool twist, but yeah, I don't know. But beautifully done. I mean, you know, the setting, no one gives a shit about the setting, let's be honest. 1950s London fashion house.
It makes for a nice backdrop. It makes it for a beautiful backdrop.
It's dull as dust.
Yeah.
It's dull as dust.
I liked how he sort of didn't even like, he kind of hates his clients.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the acting's, and the acting's great.
Yeah.
And you could give it to Dan. You know what? If you gave Daniel Day-Lewis the best actor, I think that'd be great.
Well,
I'd be fine with that.
It's a monster of a part.
Good.
He's okay, and one thing I did like about this that some of the other movies didn't have,
yeah,
he's such an asshole that you occasionally just break out laughing,
yeah,
at how mean he
right.
is to people.
I mean,
there's an acid, there's an acidic quality to the exchanges mm-hmm. between people that is funny.
Well, the things when she's scraping the toast
oh, yeah.
and pouring the tea
oh, yeah.
and all that stuff, and the yeah. sound is just amplified. It's pretty great.
He's such a preposterous, yeah. pompous, blowhard artist that, you know, he has to have total silence.
Right, yeah.
And there are shots in this movie like that. Okay. The New Year's Eve shot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's as well made as anything
oh, yeah.
you'll ever see.
Oh, yeah. It definitely feels.
Because there's a point where they drop ball. You know, it's a scene where he's looking for her at
yeah.
a New Year's Eve party.
Right.
And you see him up in the balcony. And there's a party going on, and there's floats mm-hmm. and people in costumes, and they're running around, and balloons fall from the ceiling. And they fall in a way that draws your eye to her.
Right.
And every color of the balloons is like timed out. Yeah. It's such a brilliantly conducted.
Yeah, it's really well done.
It's high-end cinema. Dunkirk is too.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I just kept, Dunkirk keeps the audience at a
right.
distance.
Yeah,
whereas this is intimate, but the people are kind of creepy.
Well, yeah, I like it without recommending it in the sense that, I mean, the problem is, can you make this movie and make Woodcock more entertaining or more sympathetic or a nicer? You can't, because it just
won't
work.
No, it's a story about an asshole.
And you probably should have nominated, you know, they nominated Leslie Manville, who plays the sister, for Best Supporting Actress.
Right.
And I think that's a mistake, because I think this whole movie hinges on the Vicky Cripes
yeah,
performance
I think she's great.
And her character, and she's great. And that's why Allison Janney is going to, we're gonna get to the Oscar nominations.
Leslie Manville is good, but
she's fine.
Her character
she's fine.
Is, she's the sister
she's
who
just
runs
cold,
the business operation.
Stern.
And she's just mean.
No fun.
Cold.
Yeah.
yeah. And so she's kind of one tone.
All right. Well, there's our top 15, everybody. Congratulations. You made it through.
Well, you get, look, you can't, you know, people go, well, you and Joel, people used to confuse us for each other.
Yeah.
We're different people, guys.
We are.
We picked different movies.
We had some overlap.
Yeah, I think but we picked enough different movies that
I think so.
We did not coordinate this list beforehand.
We did not.
And I think this is. I wish I'd remembered Kong Skull Island. God damn it, because I do. I love a big monkey movie.
Yeah, it's.
You had two monkey movies on your.
I'm the king of the monkey movies this year, apparently.
Yeah.
But all right, well, let's get into some of the other movies. Our runners up, and I'm going to start with just real quickly here, we can talk about them. And you know, the other movies nominated for Best Picture that I don't think we've talked about is The Post, which is Steven Spielberg with Tom Hanks,
yeah,
Meryl Streep. It's the story of the Washington Post breaking the story of the Pentagon Papers. I think we both liked it, but it's exactly what you think it's going to be. It's good, but you know, if you saw Spotlight a few years ago, that's a better version of this. Not that it was the same story, but it's the same, you know. I mean, this is very much All the President's Men. It's very much Spotlight. It's well done. Spielberg's awesome. But, yeah. I mean, right? I mean, anything different on The Post?
The Post was good. It's solid.
Yeah.
What really frustrated me is that Steven Spielberg doesn't have a sense of humor.
No, it's humorless, absolutely, yeah.
And that, by the way, indicates that he didn't do his research.
Exactly, yeah.
Because
well, it's
if you've ever been in a newsroom,
yeah,
there's funny people.
Well, you had
people are smart and
David,
sharp.
David Cross and Bob Odenkirk,
yeah,
are there.
You've got two funny guys. By the way, they should have done a Mr. So sketch.
Because, they should have, yeah.
Because his character, Odenkirk's character's name, Ben Bagdikian. That's
yes,
a punchline in itself.
Right.
I'm just saying there was literally no jokes in the movie.
No, there's not. Yeah.
And it's just dire and airless. And obviously it's, you know, Meryl Streep's a great actress. I think I think Tom Hanks was in it a little over his head.
Well,
it's a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to dislike it if you see it. None of us thought it was one of the best pictures of the year. The other best picture nominated movie, I was going to go through. Let me go through the movies that I liked, Ross, because I've got one of my worst. But Mudbound, which Mary J. Blige was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for that movie. I don't know if you saw this. It's on Netflix, but it's about a family in the 40s. A white family has to move on a farm and live next to a black family who are kind of sharecroppers. And there's a lot of race relation stuff. And believe me, I was watching this going, well, at least as far as a race relations historical drama, it's not as offensively violent as something like 12 Years a Slave or Birth of a Nation, which I both didn't like for those reasons. And then it kind of goes. Then the Klan shows up. So in that way, I can't recommend it. But a lot of good actors in there. Jason Clarke is in this. He's very good as kind of the white dad. You know, they both have a son that goes off to WW2, and you see that. It's good. I enjoyed it. Mary J. Blige in this is fine. I don't get why she's nominated necessarily, other than you know why, and that's okay, because Mudbound's pretty good. It's on Netflix. Go see it if you want to see something decent, if you're sitting at home. Another movie that I liked that has another Oscar-nominated person in it, as I see all of these, was All the Money in the World with Christopher Plummer as John Paul Getty. Ridley Scott directed this, Mark Wahlberg, Michelle Williams. It's the story of Paul Getty's kidnapping at the hands of really some of the worst people in the world, Corey. People in outside Naples, Italy, who are awful people. You know, anyone from Naples, Italy is a scumbag. And if you're from the Naples region, Calabria, you're a no good, awful person. Anyway, my family's from Naples. But here's the point. No, All the Money in the World is very good. Although I was reading a little bit about the real story, because this is a thing that happened. And, you know, the ransom, and John Paul Getty won't pay the ransom for some reason, is that there's a lot of sides to this story. This movie takes place from the side of his mother, who divorced. She was divorced to, I think it's Mike Getty or Mark Getty, who's John Paul Getty's son. And it's from her perspective, because apparently the son, Paul Getty, has told his story, which is significantly different than the one that Ridley Scott tells in this movie. But it was good. It was well done. And of course, this is the movie that Kevin Spacey got kicked off of, and they had to reshoot everything with Christopher Plummer. There's shots in this, Corey. Did you see this or not?
No,
because there's shots in this, like there's a scene where they're at like a boardroom or a lawyer's office where Michelle Williams is talking, and then they cut to Christopher Plummer responding, and it almost felt like Jimmy Kimmel cutting himself into like news footage, you know what I mean? Like kind of like that. So it sort of does feel, there are shots that feel like he's kind of spliced in, but he's great. I mean, he really comes off as an asshole, which is what John Paul Getty, I guess, was in real life, at least according to this movie. So I recommend All the Money in the World. So you can check that out. He was nominated for that. And then the other one we talked about last time, Molly's Game, was nominated for screenplay.
Oh, geez.
And that's a good movie.
You know what?
It didn't quite make my top 15, but it's good. It's good. We talk about it. It's very good. Jessica Chastain, I think it kind of just fits the suit in some level. She's all right. You know, again, I liked Michael Cera playing a movie star. Apparently it was Tobey Maguire in real life. And that's nominated for adapted screenplay.
That one came real Molly's close game, to being great, but didn't quite get it.
Yeah, Molly's Game's good. It's not,
it's a little,
you know,
too, you know, it's a little too one tone.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because she's narrating it and she's keeping herself very neutral and together.
Right. Apparently she's dating Aaron Sorkin in real life.
Well,
not Jessica Chastain, but Molly, the real life Molly.
Shocking.
I know. Who would have thought? So anyway, that's going to cover the Oscar movies. Do you want to do other good movies, or do you want to get into nominations? Or
I don't
do you
have.
Wanna...
I mean, there's what else? You know, it's a movie I liked that nobody gave any Wilson. With,
I didn't. I don't know if I saw it.
With with Woody Harrelson, based.
Oh,
on,
okay, yeah, I remember it coming
Klaus
out.
Comic.
But yeah.
I kind of really enjoyed that movie, but it didn't get a lot of buzz.
Right. Okay.
So you know.
Well, let me give you a couple. Blade Runner 2049 is is. Look, I think you and I feel the same way about the original Blade Runner in that we respect it, but could never really wrap our arms around it. Think it's somewhat overrated by sci-fi geeks. Blade Runner 2049 is a very, very worthy successor to Blade Runner. I also feel the way I feel about that as the original Blade Runner. It's beautiful. It's well done. It's got a lot of sharp edges that, for me, I can't wrap my arms around. The performances are good. It's technically awesome.
I feel like Blade Runner, and I got
like
in trouble. I got
Blade
trouble.
Runner 2049
for this
that much.
I got in trouble about this recently, but I feel like the Blade Runner movies are the film equivalent of Charles Bukowski or Tom Waits.
Okay, yeah.
They're for basic bitches who want to seem deep.
It's like, I'm going to pick a movie that you can't, it's too hard for you to get into, but I'm better than you, and therefore I like it.
It's like a pretentious 10th grader.
You like Star Wars. I like Blade Runner. Yeah.
Are the replicants human or are the humans replicants?
Yeah,
That stuff bores me to no end.
Well, that's what this movie is.
And visually, the original, I could watch the original Blade Runner with the sound off all day long.
Well, you could, this movie's better looking than the original Blade Runner.
That looks great,
too. This movie's better than the original Blade Runner.
I know, but the themes in it didn't grip me.
And it's all those themes,
Yeah, I know.
It's the same shit.
Those themes aren't
And
as,
Harrison Ford is in it, and Sean Young is in it, so you're going to get some of the tie-ins to the old
This
one.
Is a technically a 2016 movie, but it didn't get to theaters till 2017. Mm-hmm. Colossal.
Don't even know what that is. What
with,
is
you didn't see with Anne Hathaway and
no
Jason Sudeikis?
No.
I love the concept of this movie, and I liked it about three-quarters of the way. That's why I didn't make my list, because I didn't care for the ending very much. But it is Anne, again, returning to the giant monster theme. Anne Hathaway is kind of a drunk failure who returns to her small town. She returns to her hometown, and suddenly giant monsters start appearing in Korea. And she has some kind of connection to them. I don't want to give too much
away. Okay, I didn't see this, but maybe I should.
It's a brilliant premise and a good setup, and Jason Sudeikis plays the, you know, guy she left behind in the small town.
Okay.
Really kind of a cool movie. I just didn't love exactly how it resolved. Otherwise, I would have got, it almost got there, but didn't.
All right, well, let's talk about, speaking of monster sci-fi, I'm going to give you a couple good sci-fi movies. Now, there was an Alien movie that came out called Alien Covenant.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Alien Covenant. I didn't enjoy it as much as Kong Skull Island, but it's the direct sequel to Prometheus. It was actually directed by Ridley Scott. So he did two movies this year, which is, I don't think, you know, Alien Scott, of course, directed the original Alien and Prometheus. Who's in this? Danny McBride, Billy Crudup, Michael Fassbender returning as the, What do you call him? The cyborg? I forget what they call him.
Android,
But they did a good job with this, and I thought it was effective as an alien movie. And then there was a movie called Life, which was more like the original Alien. And I believe there was some sort of lawsuit between the alien people and Life. Like, Life was going to be an official Alien movie, but then wasn't. But who's in this. Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds. It's really well done. It's not a movie a lot of people saw, but Life, it came out in March of last year. And again, Jake Gyllenhaal's a guy, and I know we say this every year. Mm-hmm. Jake Gyllenhaal is a guy who we make fun of for being a pretty boy, for maybe being a closeted homosexual, and then he's only in good movies, and he only acts well. And I should stop making fun of him, because if he's in a movie, it's probably pretty good. Prince of Persia's side. So Jake Gyllenhaal, I'm sorry.
Jake Gyllenhaal's a very good actor.
Yeah. So I enjoyed Life. I thought that was pretty good. Here's another nominated actor I didn't get to. Roman J. Israel Esquire, which I saw with Denzel. Did you see it or no?
No, I didn't.
Here's the thing with that, okay?
You know why? I was excited by the trailer.
Yeah, it's a good
trailer. And the trailer looks great.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, cool, Denzel, well, ripping it up. And I like movies about downtrodden lawyers sometimes.
Yeah, no, and the lawyer stuff is really goodness. The first hour of this
goes,
is great. Yeah.
The second half doesn't pay off.
Because
right?
You almost think this is based on a true story, but it isn't. Yeah. It's actually the guy, I'd have to look up his name. It's the guy who made Nightcrawler, speaking of Jake Gyllenhaal.
Sure.
It's that same guy who made this, and Denzel is very good. He deserves an Oscar nomination, I guess, because he's good. But yeah, this movie. You know who else is in movies who you also kind of hate, and you already brought him up today, but everything he's in is almost always good, is Colin Farrell. He is sort of the rival attorney who sort of works with him. Colin Farrell, you know, in Bruges, he's been in a lot of really good movies. And again, he's
the
a
lobster.
Guy that Colin Farrell sometimes looks like a pretty boy who can't act. And then he's in great
The Beguiled.
Movies. Yeah, he's in good movies, so Colin Farrell's really good in this. But yeah, Roman J. Israel Esquire, man, you know, because he's playing a guy who's like autistic a little bit. He's on the spectrum. Like, he knows the entire California penal code, you know, from the top of his head, can pull things out. And he's like, you know, the guy, the attorney he works with gets ill. So he has to go from being a guy sitting in the office to a guy who's actually litigating cases. There is a legal thriller element to it that isn't going to work for a lot of people. Ultimately, this movie is a little more lukewarm. It starts out great, though. I mean, believe me, the first 30, 40 minutes, I'm going, this is great. You know, and there's some Denzel being Denzel, giving those long speeches and all that stuff. But yeah, Roman J. Israel Esquire was pretty good. Marvel movies, the two that I liked last year, and again, I liked them as Marvel movies, were Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Thor Ragnarok. Those were good Marvel movies. Taika Waititi, I really like. And his version of Thor, I thought, was really well done. And I thought his character is the one that got all the laughs, or most of the laughs. So I'm a fan of him.
Mm-hmm.
And those were good. Any thoughts on those?
You know, they were
good for those.
Thor was okay. It didn't blow my skirt up.
None of those,
neither did Guardians.
I mean, Guardians was not as good as the first one, but I thought there was enough popcorn,
I might
feel
be
good
getting
elements.
A little jaded and jaundiced.
We're going to talk more about Marvel when I get to my worst movies in a second. But let me give you some good documentaries. Icarus, which I believe is Oscar nominated, about the Russian doping scandal. And that's in the news because a lot of the stuff that came out in Icarus is the reason the Russians are banned from the Olympics because of what happened in Sochi. So that was really good. And that is Oscar nominated for documentary. And also was a movie called Abacus, Small Enough to Jail. I probably talked about that on the last show, about a Chinese bank in Chinatown in New York City. That was very well done. Very, very PBS Frontline. I think that's where it originated anyway. But that was really good. Last Men in Aleppo, I talked about on the show last time. That's on Netflix. Again, Oscar nominated. The other Oscar nominated documentary that I saw is called Strong Island. Boy, I'm saying skip this one. It's about a woman who tells the story of her brother's murder on Long Island in the early 90s. She goes back and investigates, tries to get to the bottom of it. To me, there wasn't enough drama in what she uncovers about it. A lot of the story is just about her family and, you know, her struggles with gender because she's lesbian. And it's a lot of race, a lot of homosexuality stuff in there. Maybe needed a little more murder. Look, I know I sound like an asshole right now. It just, as a documentary, I respect it, but wouldn't tell you to run out and see it. And then another Netflix documentary, I think I talked about this before too, was called Voyeur. And that was really good, about the guy who owned the hotel.
Yes.
And Gay Talese, the author who tried to get to the bottom of that story and wrote a book about it. And that's on Netflix.
Peeped on the people.
Peeping on people. So those are the good documentaries. Any other good movies? Then we'll do the Oscar noms real quick, no, and then we'll do the worst.
I'm good on the...
Yeah. All right. All right, let's do the Oscar nominations for Best Picture. Call Me By Your... Okay. We're going to lead into... Call Me By Your Name. I saw all the best pictures. I don't recommend that. Did you watch that or no?
Good fuck, did I hate it.
Oh, my God. It's not good.
But you know what?
Okay. And it's well done.
All right. And I know that as a film critic, I'm supposed to be open to all genres,
yeah,
and open to all kinds of, but I just look at a movie and I size it up and I go, yeah, I'm not into it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I watched it and I wasn't into it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, as boring as
you're
I thought.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
Boring as I thought Columbus was.
Right.
This was worse.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, why is this not a bad thing with an older man and a younger?
Well, I actually heard that criticism.
Why are we not bothered by this?
The guy's 22 and the kid's 17 or something? I don't know.
You know, kind of borderline, isn't it?
Well, this is white people at their most boring.
You know, remember...
That's what this is.
Now, the appalling... Now, he's an idiot and doesn't deserve to be famous, but Milo Yiannopoulos got in trouble for suggesting that a relationship like the one depicted in Call Me By Your Name wasn't a bad thing and that it was kind of helpful to the younger kids, right? And he got rightfully he lost his book deal and got shunned he's generally,
yes,
that guy's just a flame throwing idiot.
He is, yes.
But I kind of thought about it and I went, well, Milo said that.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
And no one seems to be bothered by that aspect of it.
I thought Call Me By Your Name was boring. I know people go, it's beautiful and it's blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Columbus is beautiful. Lady Bird is beautiful.
Yeah.
All these other movies are beautiful. If it was about two guys, you know, and it's not that it's about two guys falling in love and you can't enjoy that. I can enjoy a movie about two guys falling in love. I just not this one.
Could you imagine spending a minute with those people?
No.
Like
sitting around drinking wine in Italy?
Would those people be people you associate with?
No.
Yeah.
It felt like, I think I told you this probably off the show, but it was kind of like, it was kind of like characters from a Woody Allen movie where everyone sits around and discusses art and drinks wine and eats fabulous meals. You never see any of them go to work, but everybody's rich. You know, it's just, it's not good. I'm sorry. I know people thought that was important. All right. The other Oscar-nominated movies were Get Out, Dunkirk, Three Billboards, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, Darkest Hour. They have Shape of Water, Entertainment Weekly here in handicapping as most likely to win. Mm-hmm. You would give it to?
I think that's going to pull it out, but it could go to Three Billboards.
Well, it was your number one movie. Again, look.
I think, you know what? I think Shape of Water is a little bit of a safer choice than Three Billboards.
Well, based upon my favorites were, I give it to Dunkirk. Although, if Shape of Water wins, I have no beef with that. It's a great movie, so I have no problem with that. All right, let's go over to Best Actress. Margot Robbie and I, Tanya, Meryl Streep in The Post, Sally Hawkins. Shape of Water, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird and Frances McDormand for Three Billboards. Everyone's got Frances McDormand winning it, and you say...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but you know what? You can't do Shape of Water without Sally Hawkins. I don't know who could do that better.
Sally Hawkins is great. I've loved
Sally. And I just that's a better movie.
If you've been listening to this show long enough to remember Quantica, you know I've been on Sally Hawkins' tip.
What did you talk about Sally Hawkins on Quantica?
No, I'm just saying, if you've been listening that long.
I got you, okay.
I've loved that from Happy Go Lucky.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Been on the Sally. And by the way, if you like Sally Hawkins, you see a lot of her in this movie.
Yeah, she's naked in this.
The whole business.
There you go. And you know, and Saoirse Ronan is great, and you know they in this category they're all great. I'm not going to disparage any of them. Even I didn't like Three Billboards, but Frances McDormand is great. I think we agree she's going to win for Best Actor. Denzel in Roman J. Israel Esquire, Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out, Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, Timothée Chalamet in Call Me By Your Name, and Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour. You agree that Gary Oldman's going to win, and he deserves it.
Seems like it's a lock.
Yeah, you know what? I'm fine with that. You know, Daniel Kaluuya was fine. He didn't do much for me. Timothée Chalamet, I didn't think was that great either. I mean, if Daniel Day-Lewis won, I wouldn't be upset because he does that. So much of that movie is his performance. But yeah, Gary Oldman, you know, boy, you can't do much better than that. for supporting actress, we've already talked about this, but Allison Janney looks like she'll win. Octavia Spencer for Shape of Water, nothing extraordinary about that performance. It was fine.
Yeah, and
but you don't even remember her when the movie's
over. No, she had a nice.
It was okay.
She had a nice Octavia Spencer.
And again,
part.
Lastly, Mansville in Phantom Thread, the other girl was more memorable than she was.
Yeah.
And Mary J. Blige in Mudbound was fine, but you know, and Laurie Metcalf in Lady Bird, which Laurie Metcalf's great, but someone else could have done that. I think you got to give it to Allison Janney. All right,
it's Allison Janney
for supporting actor. Christopher Plummer, like I said, is great in All the Money in the World. Woody Harrelson in Three Billboards, Richard Jenkins in Shape of Water, William Dafoe in Florida Project, and Sam Rockwell in Three Billboards. Fuck, these guys were all good.
Sam Rockwell won the Golden Globe.
Yeah, he did.
I would give.
I think
it to,
he won the BAFTA yesterday.
Yeah, he's probably in the. And you know what? I love Sam Rockwell.
But do you think people are going to want to reward Florida Project because people like it so much? And the only major nomination it got was
Dafoe. I would give it to William Dafoe. I think it's an extraordinary performance.
He is great.
But I like, you know what? I love Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always liked Sam Rockwell in all kinds of stuff, from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to, you know, anyway.
All right. Best director, Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, and Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water. So if Three Billboards were to win, Martin McDonagh cannot win because he's not nominated, which means Del Toro could win director,
It's Del Toro.
But then he doesn't win for picture.
It's either Del Toro or Paul Thomas Anderson, but they're never going to give him an award.
And Nolan's an ass, and no one likes him, forget about him.
And Paul Thomas Anderson's a great director.
He is.
And he's not a bad guy.
Yeah. Well,
unlike Nolan, who's a dick.
Nolan, who people kind of don't like. All right, and then for the screenplays, Logan is actually nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, as is Mudbound, Disaster Artist, Molly's Game, and Call Me By Your Name. EW thinks Call Me By Your Name's going to win, I think, and not because does Disaster Artist have a shot, or are they just, because it's not even James Franco that wrote it.
I think Molly's Game's a great script.
Yeah, Molly's Game, Aaron Sorkin, I think,
it's
is
a great
is,
script,
yeah,
it just didn't come
it
together,
is, yeah.
It's a movie.
Yeah, but I don't know, I mean, it's James Ivory, who was, you know, the Remains of the Day guy, and they like him. I that one, I don't know.
I feel like if we're going to Get Out could win
the
screenplay.
You know, you're right
for
about
original?
That. Yeah, well, for
original?
Yeah, I haven't gotten to original yet, but it's The Big Sick, Shape of Water, Lady Bird, Get Out, and Three Billboards. So, yeah, maybe that's where Peele gets his moment.
I think they could be like, let's cut him, because what the Oscars really is a coronation ceremony.
Well, yes, Jordan Peele will win.
Let us anoint our black Jesus, Jordan Peele.
Let's give Jordan Peele 5 minutes to say the most extraordinary meme-worthy speech in the history of the Oscars.
But
let's do that.
It's a good movie
and it's
a good
script. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
All right.
It's fine.
But I'm just thinking how the Academy works.
Yeah, I guess.
But if not that, Three Billboards will probably
some of these other things, you know, for a documentary, the one that I like the best of the nominated ones, I guess I'd probably give it to Last Man in Aleppo. That fucking movie punched me right in the gut, man. But, you know, and that's on Netflix, and I think the Netflix stuff has more of a shot. Faces Places was the documentary that I could not see. I tried and tried. You know, Baby Driver might have a shot when it comes to editing, maybe.
Yeah.
Just because of that.
Sound mixing.
Yeah, and, you know, for visual effects, I think you got to go with...
Although
with
Dunkirk's editing is...
Yeah, Dunkirk's
is
really...
Amazing.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, these other ones, I don't even know. I didn't see the foreign... Or the animated, so I don't even know.
But yeah, we're doing fine. No one cares.
You're loving Vince. All right. Worst movies of the year. I don't have a long list. You give me one.
I thankfully don't see as many of the bad movies as I would normally.
Yeah, you don't see all the garbage, Sandler's,
the Nut Houses,
the karate movies, and all
that
stuff.
But I will say, here's one that was a
Seagal.
Real big disappointment.
Yeah.
Suburbicon.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
It's like a Coen Brothers movie for people who never saw a Coen Brothers
movie.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a Coen script that was sitting in a drawer,
mm-hmm.
and they went, okay. And it's George Clooney, who's made good movies before.
Yeah.
And it stinks.
Yeah.
It's like...
What was his Mountain Man? What was the Monuments Man?
Oh, the Men Who Stared Ghosts.
No, the Monuments Men.
Monuments Men.
Yeah, people didn't like
that.
Yeah,
Clooney's kind of... Well, he's a hit and miss director, I'll tell you that. I liked Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Yeah, I did too.
I liked... he seems
the
be,
movie about the newscaster.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Those are both real
that
good.
That was good, yeah.
The Monuments Men was kind of weak. This is a mess. It's a hot mess. It's got almost the elements. It's like, it's very weird. It's like if you bought a brand new Fender Stratocaster and it was missing the pickups. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's like yeah. something's off on
well,
it. Julianne Moore, who's always great, is great in this. But the characters of Matt Damon's, Oscar Isaacs is like the one guy who's acting like he's in a Coen Brothers movie.
Okay, yeah.
He gets the whole thing. It's just got a nasty tone to it.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Here's, you know what sucks? Detroit.
Yeah.
The movie and the city.
Well, by the way, that was as obvious Oscar bait as you could make.
Absolutely the Oscar baitiest Oscar bait shit.
No one took that bait.
That movie is even worse than Three Billboards in... It's just violent, 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 violent. And yeah, there's supposed to be a message there, but it's lost in all the violence. I know people that went to this who, you know, like me, went like, you know, it's an important story, the Detroit riots. And it's really more even about, not even about the riots. I mean, it's set in the riots in that it's this event that happens in a hotel where police abused some citizens, some black people. Boy, don't see Detroit. Talk about no fun. And it is Catherine Bigelow who they, you know, who to me has made three Oscar Beatty movies that have all I've all sort of not liked. And that was what was the one about the bomb guys?
The Hurt Locker
and Zero Dark Thirty, which to me is the one of the most compelling events in modern history. The hunt for Osama bin Laden. And I was bored with that.
I like both those movies.
I found them both disappointing, but
she's a director who, much like Ridley Scott, is so intense and severe that they kind of I check out of them.
Well, Ridley Scott's movie was both of his were way better than Detroit. I also have Three Billboards on my worst. I have Call Me By Your Name on my worst just for being boring. More than I think about it, I really look, if you're a Star Wars fan, see The Last Jedi. I don't think that's a great movie, and in a sense, we gave it the full review. We did a whole show about
it,
but
on the worst list, it's
the worst Star Wars movie ever made, arguably, or one of them.
Why don't you apologize to Attack of the Clones?
Yeah, okay,
all right,
you got a point.
But it wasn't the worst, but I get why fans didn't like it.
And we did a whole show. Do you have any other worst movies?
I got a couple.
Okay, because I have one that I'm trying to close on, but go ahead.
Well, is it? Maybe I'm spoiling.
Keep going.
Tom Cruise starred in a little film.
I didn't see American Made.
Called The Mummy.
Oh, I didn't see The Mummy either.
Whoo, daddy.
Okay, The
Mummy.
You know
what? Actually, The Mummy isn't the worst movie.
Really?
It's the fact that it was intended to be this big tentpole.
Yeah.
And it lays flat.
Interesting.
It's not as bad as, I've seen worse movies, but it was this thing that killed, they had this whole dark universe set up.
Yeah.
And it killed it. Mm-hmm. They basically were like, we're going to stop trying to make these universal monsters into a thing. And they're going to have to reboot all of that again and start over. They had a Bride of Frankenstein movie set up with Angelina Jolie that they killed because the mummy tanked. That was a real stink bomb.
Yeah, I was going to thought you were going to say American Made, that Doug Liman made with Tom Cruise, which I didn't have a chance to see.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was any good.
No, that was not.
Okay.
On the worst list.
Anything else?
There's some bad comedies. Guys.
Give us a few.
There's some bad Rough Night.
Don't know it.
Was a rough watch.
Yeah.
And some of these I just kind of saw incidentally.
Yeah.
The House.
Yes, I saw some of that.
With Will Ferrell and Amy.
Yes. And Jason Matsunakis is all over that thing. And
Mantzoukas. Mantzoukas,
completely annoying. Here's how I saw The House.
Yeah.
I was watching this on somebody's seat back on an airplane next to me, and I hated it for that, with no sound.
Okay. Here is an open... Now, there's another movie that was a bad bomb.
Yeah.
That was a comedy that didn't work. Snatched, with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn.
Oh, was that this year? 2017?
It was a wet fart in a dry bag. That movie did not work. Dear Hollywood, open letter. I don't want to write off. I don't want to write up Amy. I don't want to write off Amy Schumer's.
I will.
Maybe that's why she married the guy, so she can retire with dignity.
Maybe. Yeah, 2017.
No, I don't want to write up
36% Rotten Tomatoes.
She needs. You know what Amy Schumer needs to do is fucking humble herself.
Yeah,
and let somebody else make a movie around her. And don't let her.
I mean,
do you know what I mean?
You
know what she needs to do is be in somebody else's movie.
Well, it's Paul Feig produced this, so
she and Kevin Hart need to stop doing this. We're in the star vehicle thing, and have somebody put them in a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, you're saying she needs to be in an ensemble.
Like a Noah Baumbach movie or something.
Yeah, well, she's not doing that.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm sure they backed up the Brinks truck to her house and got her to be in this movie. And she's
also
laughing all the way to the
bank. Beg of Hollywood. I have a lot of friends who are comedians who are out there working hard, who are very funny and talented comedians. We meet a lot of guys that work and are hilarious. Like Ted Alexandro is just like a regular ham and egg comic who's really funny. Mm-hmm. Stop making Ike Barinholtz a thing.
Yeah, well.
That is the non-funniest motherfucker.
Oh, I'm not.
That gap tooth, no talent hump.
Oh, come on now.
He sucks the life out of a movie faster than Dracula. That piece of dung. They keep trying
Ike
to make him.
Ike Barinholtz, look out.
Well, they keep putting Ike Barinholtz in movies like.
Well, but they put like him and this, Jason Mantzoukas. They put all these. Paul Scheer, all these guys. They get all these movies
Mantzoukas
where they're the weird guy.
Mantzoukas is
the weird funny guy.
He was terrible
you
in the
should
house.
Be the weird funny guy in a movie.
I know. Mantzoukas, though, is funny in the context of he on like How Did That Get Made?
Yeah.
He's on with Paul Scheer, the podcast.
Okay.
He's good on that.
All right.
He's funny in doing a comedy show and a setup. In movies, he's a stink bomb.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't
this
see
Ike Barinholtz can blow. So
I
there's some terrible stage. Comedies. The House had all these funny people in it.
Yeah.
A cast stocked with
yeah,
funny people.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not, like, I'm not a Will Ferrell hater.
Right.
I love, like, Step Brothers is really funny. Sometimes I like Will Ferrell in movies. This stunk.
Well, I also, and again, you know, I'm not picking on someone for their age and... Believe me, she's the same age as me, but watching Amy Poehler be a mom sending her kid to college is kind of depressing,
too. It's a little bit of a bummer.
It's kind of like old Chevy Chase or something, right? Isn't it kind of like you used to get the girl or you used to be this cute thing that guys wanted to get with, and now it's you're just like, you know, it's a little sad.
It is a little bit of a bummer.
It's a little bit of a bummer. All right, well, let's talk about the big disappointment of the year, and look... I don't care how much you like these movies. Don't tell me you like Spider-Man Homecoming, fucking comic book nerds.
I did not.
Well, we did a whole show about how much that sucked. And, yeah, I mean, everything that's wrong with Marvel movies, and what I say by that, everything that's wrong with the Marvel Universe. And I actually have heard people, and again, I haven't seen it, complaining that the problem with Black Panther is that it has to have all the Marvel Universe stuff in it. That Black Panther would be better without all that.
Yeah.
And even though the Black Panther was in Captain America, or what was he using Captain America?
He was in
Civil War. Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah, we already saw the character.
It's not like it's his debut or anything, but, you know, this Spider-Man, there's not a background character. There's not a sign of a store that the characters walk by that isn't a reference to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's absolutely fucking exhausting to try to watch this movie. And it's not just like they put these things in and some people will get them and some people won't. The camera lingers on a license plate that is secret code for a comic book. And the camera is zooming in on this. I know. And it's hanging there. And I don't get the reference.
No.
And if you did, what happens if you get that reference?
Well,
do you simultaneously climax and shoot jizz all over the seat in front of you?
I know.
What do you do?
They do all this stuff.
Oh, my God. You suck, Marvel.
I didn't hate it for those reasons, but
it's exhausting.
It's gratuitous.
It's exhausting.
I mean, I get it, but it doesn't, like, if the street is called Steranko Boulevard,
right.
Which is Jim Steranko, comic book artist,
right.
Like, they'll just throw in stuff like
but
that.
But how long does the camera have to linger on that sign?
I don't know. That, by the way, that's no longer... nerd stuff is you get excited because it's a memory of something
and you go,
ooh, I remember when that had the Happy Days cartoon where Fonzie went back in time. Like, that'll trigger something in your brain and you get a little, like a... So with these Marvel movies, I'm like a junkie with collapsed veins.
I gotcha.
They can no longer stimulate my nerd quadrants. I did like Michael Keaton in that movie. And very little else of it.
But this is the opposite of Logan, where Logan is stripping out the comic book tropes and focusing on the characters. This movie throws them all on top.
Yeah, it was a lot of...
It's an ice cream sundae where three quarters of it is topping, and you can't even get to the ice cream. You know, it just doesn't work.
I thought
Spider-Man was fine in Civil War, and he's in the Avengers, and maybe that'll be good. It's just this movie... collapses under the weight of the Marvel Cinematic Universe destroyed this movie rather than making it better. And maybe, you know, and look, I got no problem with Iron Man and Tony Stark.
But he was in a big chunk of the movie.
It's kind
of
too much
that,
of him,
you know,
too.
Why that was? Because they're like, we've got a contractual obligation for Downey to be in these movies.
Well,
so we'll throw him in this. Whatever. It was, he wasn't great.
No, I really, really,
but we're
really
getting Marvel
disliked.
Fatigue.
Well, absolutely.
And you know what, though? Black Panther would probably be better served with limited connection
well,
to the rest
and
of the
again,
universe.
I feel like, you know, Deadpool and Logan have moved away from tie. And granted, there's legal reasons why they can't be tied into the universe.
Deadpool's got
and
references.
And it's got X-Men
stuff.
References in it. But, you know, it's less of that. You know, a movie is not great because a guy from another movie you like walked into
here's
it for two
seconds.
Here's
the ironic thing.
And Thor's got lots of cinematic universe stuff in it, too.
Here's the crazy
but
thing.
But Thor was funnier. Thor was better acted, better directed.
The comic book store in Ferndale, which was a great store, just closed.
Okay.
They're closing this week.
Yeah.
There's a problem here. These movies are strip mining.
Yeah.
And I think they're overtaxing the fan base.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, we're going to...
Here's a movie, though, one more that I did see. Sure. Now, I didn't see the Emoji Movie, but I can tell you that was terrible.
It's on Netflix.
I didn't see...
I know they've added it
I didn't
there.
See the Transformers, but that was so bad that they fired Michael Bay from they're going to reboot the Transformers franchise.
Well, what about Justice League?
That stunk, too.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Well...
I didn't see Wonder Woman either, and people like that.
Justice League was an improvement over Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, which wasn't good.
Which was bad. Yeah. But I don't really like the tone of those. Maybe with Zack Snyder gone, they'll get something out of it. Anyway.
Well.
Book of Henry.
Oh, what was that?
The Book of Henry was by a director named Colin Trevorrow.
We talked about this on the show.
Fired from Star Wars.
From Star Wars, yeah.
Because this movie came out and the critics basically went full on Deliverance.
Yeah.
And
he was
going to
do episode 9
like
of Star Wars. He made the Jurassic World movie, and then got fired.
This was a career killer.
Yeah, well,
and go to Rotten Tomatoes and read the reviews.
Yeah,
we
did this before, and
this movie
bad,
was a colossally weird movie.
What about like you didn't see what was it, The Dark Tower? Or something?
I didn't
people
see that.
Didn't
no,
like that.
People didn't like that. And there's a lot of crap.
Yeah, a lot of
we
crap.
Listed all the good movies.
We've given you 50 good movies to watch today, guys. So, and that's the purpose
of
this show.
If you see Snatched come up on your HBO,
skip it.
Keep clicking.
Skip it.
The House.
Skip
pass
it.
Right by it.
Skip it. Go watch The Big Sick. If you want a movie that's kind of funny, go.
Hey, I'll tell you one though.
Look, I didn't have a lot of comedies on my list. Admit that.
Actually, there's a comedy.
Disaster Artist is fun.
Comedy coming out this week.
Yeah.
That I can say, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, but I would recommend Game Night.
Okay.
With Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, and this is exactly the kind of movie like The House that shouldn't work, but this one the cast was good and it had some laughs in it and it worked fine.
See Wind River. See Shape of Water. See Florida Project.
Well, obviously that's my number one.
You can rent
you're
that.
You're going to see a movie, go see Shape.
Yeah, all right. Let's get out of here. Thank you, Corey. Movie Mania 2018. It's in the can. It's in the books. Go watch those Oscars.
Speaking of in the
root
can.
Root for the good guys. What about the can?
Well, it's Harvey Weinstein going to be catching.
Well,
is he going to be in the big house?
Him and Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Together. I don't know. But let's get out of here. Thanks for listening to what is often our most popular show of the year. So thanks to you guys, the fans, for listening to Joel Radio with me, Joel Fregomeni, and he's Corey Hall. We watched a million movies, so you don't have to. Or maybe you want to. I don't know. You know what I'm glad to be done with? Watching movies. So I'm going to go watch some bad television.
Yeah, TV
I'm
shows
go,
next week.
I'm behind on the Grand Tour because I was watching fucking All the Money in the World and Roman J. Israel Esquire. And I kind of hate my life right now. But that'll all end. Not my life. Hating it. But I'll be back for more Boomania 2019.
Good.
And who knows what.
We'll review all the Broadway.
Good night, everybody.